silence has descended on us, so I guess that means we better get started.
Hi,
it's a pleasure to be able to introduce. Public servant of the Armenian Church for over 20 years, happily married and a proud father of two. The Republic of Armenia is a nation with a population of about 3 million individuals, with an estimated 10 million Armenians worldwide. Armenia became the first nation to declare Christianity as its state religion in 301 A.D. The Christian faith has shaped the Armenian culture so intimately that it permeates the very landscape of nearly every corner of that country. The St. Sarkis Armenian Apostolic Church mission is to proclaim its message of salvation through worship, education, witness, service, and a common life in Christ as expressed in distinctive faith experiences of Armenian people. Thank you, Deacon, for being here. Please rise for our invocation.
In the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, Amen. O God, Lord of creation, we ask your blessing on the members of this distinguished body, all of whom labor in the name of justice and human dignity. We pray that you renew in us a deep gratitude for all the blessings you bestow, for the gift of faith and the privilege of stewardship by which we rise above our immediate concerns and work together for a greater good. We thank you for the dedication of these leaders of Dallas City Council, and we pray that you will grant them the wisdom and the strength to fight the good fight on behalf of their constituents. We are aware, Lord, that these are days of strain and hardship for many of our fellow citizens, our friends, our neighbors. People across this great state and nation are feeling the weight of financial distress and demoralizing uncertainty it brings. Comfort these souls, Lord, ease their hearts and provide for their true needs so they can endure these days until better ones arrive, as they surely will under your guidance. We are aware, too, that our country is at war and that our soldiers are risking their lives to defend and preserve the well-being of this nation. Protect these brave souls, Lord. Guard their precious lives and return them safely to their loved ones. Let their sacrifices not be in vain, and let the world awaken from conflict to find a new and enduring peace. Help us to find dignity where there is pain, light where there is shadow, joy where there is despair. Give us the strength to build a better world for all your children. Finally, we ask for your blessing on this great land of America, in time of peace as well as war, in days of prosperity as well as anxiety. Our country remains a beacon of hope and strength to the rest of the world. Keep this land under your watchful eyes, Lord, and let your light shine on her people. For all of these blessings, may your name be praised from generation to generation. Amen.
Amen. Deacon, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Allen, would you like to lead us in the pledge?
I would. Please join me in the pledge, please.
Ms. Medrano?
Good morning, guests. Good morning, colleagues. If the women wearing red reps will come up, say that three times. Thank you very much for being here. We have with us Kim Solis, Lauren Church, Debbie Slade-Smith, Liliana Rogers, and Sharon Hillbarter, all here representing the women wearing red today. We know that heart disease is a very personal topic. It is the number one killer of women in America. And each of you have a red pen at your desk. We'd like for you to wear it. It is a symbol of women and heart disease And by wearing it, you're committing to love your heart and take action today. I'd like to read the proclamation, and it reads, whereas disease of the heart are the nation's leading cause of death, while stroke ranks the third leading cause. Each year, 53% of deaths are due to cardiovascular disease. 61% of stroke deaths occur in females. Whereas cardiovascular disease claims the lives of nearly 460,000 American females each year, approximately one death per minute. So in the time that I'm here, three men, women will have died. In 2010, the direct and indirect cost of cardiovascular disease in these United States, including stroke, is an estimated $503 billion. Whereas more women die of heart disease, stroke, and other cardiovascular diseases than the next five leading causes of death combined, including all cancers, yet only 21% of women consider a cardiovascular disease their greatest health risk. Whereas making the right choices relating to proper nutrition, physical activity, doctor visits, and other lifestyle methods is essential to living a heart healthy life. And whereas to raise awareness of the importance of preventing this disease of the heart, February is designated as American Heart Month. In addition, Go Red for Women is the American Heart Association's national call to increase awareness about heart disease, which is the leading cause of death for women, and to inspire women to take charge of their heart health. And whereas all women should learn their own personal risk for heart disease using tools such as the American Heart Association's Go Red for Women Heart Checkup and by talking to their health care provider. Now, therefore, I, Pauline Medrano, Deputy Mayor Pro Tem for the City of Dallas, representing the Mayor, Tom Leppard, and on behalf of the entire City Council, do hereby proclaim Friday, February the 5th, 2010, as National Wear Red Day in Dallas, Texas. And we urge all citizens, and especially the employees here at City of Dallas, to wear red and increase the awareness of this important topic. Here with us, we have Kim. If Kim, in the interest of time, if you'll take about 30 seconds, we appreciate it. Thank you, women, ladies, for being here.
Thank you very much. On behalf of all women, we appreciate your support and recognition of our mission to educate and increase awareness of women's heart disease and it being the number one killer of women, which is a very it sort of takes your breath away when you really stop and think about that. And I would challenge each of you to think that, you know, really, did I know that before today? And if we can answer that we've helped you learn something new today about women and heart disease, then we have accomplished our mission for the day. Thank you for the City of Dallas.
Thank you, Kim. Appreciate it. Okay, if we will step over here, we can take a quick picture. If you'll step over.
You bet. Thanks. It's my pleasure to now invite Noelle Biggs, Gina Remington, Diana Euricia, Beth Weems Pirtle, and Pam Quinn, who's representing the Emilio Ramos of the Leroy Center, to the podium. How are you ladies doing? Terrific. These individuals have all been very instrumental in promoting international understanding to citizens in the Dallas community and beyond. In March of 2008, under the guidance of all of these individuals, Richland College, UNA, USA, Dallas Chapter, and the Leroy Center for Education Telecommunication collaborated to implement the Model United Nations and the Going Global with the UN videos in Dallas. Currently, these videos are available throughout the year to 500,000 Dallas viewers through the Dallas Community College educational cable TV, as well as online to millions of citizens on the Internet.
all of us at the City of Dallas earn the recognition of becoming the second city to have cable access to the Going Global with the UN videos due to the important initiative by Richland, UNA, USA, Dallas Chapter, and the Leroy Center for Education and Telecommunications. It is our pleasure to formally congratulate each and every one of you, convey to you our pride for all of the work that you've done involved in this remarkable initiative, and also providing opportunities to enhance Dallas's role in the international region. So if I could, I will present these special recognitions to each one of you, which again highlights the work of all of the organizations, the importance that it does, and our deep appreciation. Thank you.
On behalf of Richland College, LaCroix Center, and the UNA USA Dallas Chapter, I would like to say thank you very much for this special award. Thank you, Mayor, thank you, Council members, and thank you, City of Dallas. It's such an honor to receive this award. We embrace the United Nations vision to dream for a better world and to play an active role to make it a reality by implementing the Model United Nations and the Going Global with UNDPs. And also we go to the community to call to the ISTs, K-12 teachers, to implement the Model UN into their curriculum. By doing it, we believe, we hope, we are assisting local and global communities to bring strong leaders to bring a better future for all of us. Thank you very much once again.
Mayor, I would like to say to, I'm sorry for interrupting, my daughter participated in Model UN when she was in high school, and it was one of the highlights of her life. It's an incredible program. Thank you.
Mary, it's a pleasure, the other Mary. Should we get her up here, too? Just for the spirit of it. Mary, we need you to get up. Come on. Mary Nix heads our sanitation department. She and I have a special privilege this morning. Earlier this year, we got news that the sanitation department received a national award for one of our waste diversion programs. With more information about that, let me turn it over to Mary. Thanks for everything you do.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Mayor. And we're here today to celebrate and share with you all the city's environmental award from a national publication called Waste and Recycling News. This is a national industry publication, and they only give out two environmental awards a year, one for corporate citizens and one for government entities. Well, guess what? In 2009, the City of Dallas was the governmental entity that won this award. And if you would be so kind, Sheila, to present that to the mayor for the city. We're very excited about that. We won. We won because our council decided to have an aggressive electronics recycling program, and we named it Stop, Drop, and Go. This program was to keep old TVs and computer monitors out of the landfill while providing residents with a great way to recycle them. You might remember that it was just about a year ago that we kicked off this program at Reunion Arena. In fact, you might even remember Reunion Arena. The Federal Communications Commission was at that time switching the entire nation's broadcasting from analog to digital, and that switchover was going to create thousands upon thousands of obsolete televisions. Those are the kinds that would be discardable. So Stop, Drop, and Go was a partnership between the City of Dallas and several very outstanding and truly environmentally responsible TV manufacturers who are represented here today. Through their help, we have been able to recycle over 600 100,000 pounds of electronics here in Dallas, and that garnered this award. Thanks so much to the TV manufacturers who voluntarily, this was not a mandate, they voluntarily agreed to pay the processing costs, and our city saved over $50,000 in recycling. These folks flew in here from across the country to be with us today, and I'd love to be able to give each of them this award. Trisha Conroy, she's the executive director of MRM. Trisha? Michael Moss, the senior manager of Samsung. Jim Cornwell. Jim Cornwell is the president of Universal Recycling Technologies, the company that did all this recycling for us. Thank you. Mike Sharp of Panasonic. And Missy Hayes, she's in the engineering division of Mitsubishi of Digital Electronics. And I just have to point out to you that their award is a completely recycled frame that's old wood that was recycled. We even put the electronic gizmo decorations on them. So they are going recycling all the way. Thank you all for your amazing commitment and the ongoing funding for Stop, Drop, and Go. Let me return this to the mayor.
Thank you, Mary. As Mary said, the great thing about this was these organizations, companies, didn't get involved because they had to. They got involved because they believed the effort. As the change took place with the FCC and moving from the analog to the digital, the recycling of the old TVs would have raised two big issues. Either one, it would have been a large cost issue, or two, it would have been done in the wrong way and had enormous environmental implications. Because of these folks getting involved, it was done the right way, it was a savings to the taxpayers, and we are just so very appreciative to each and every one of you for being involved. Now, Mary, can you help me enroll it's a deal. So in appreciation, we'd like to give each one of you, in addition to the recycled frame that you've got, a special recognition from our city for your commitment to helping protect and preserve the environment. Each one of these recognize your effort, especially thank your organization, and each one of you personally give you our gratitude. We thank you very much. We appreciate it. Thank you. Mr. Atkins, can I turn it over to you?
Okay. Good morning, everyone. We're going to keep it short, and Chris, we got a PowerPoint. Let's show that first about Home for the Holidays. Are we moving? Okay, here. These are some pictures from Thanksgiving. Frank, Costa Corners, what they did, they fed over 600 people in 2 hours. And also was a company called Transportation Unlimited. They went to all the homeless shelters, picked those people up at 6 o'clock a.m. and brought them to the club and fed those 600 people. These are the Sunday pictures for the Home for the Holidays. Holidays kickoff for the celebration we do every year. This is my third Home for the Holidays. And here are some of the sponsors for that event. we got one coming. Since you asked. You ask, you shall receive, Ron. I guess got a little problem with the sound.
Got a little witness, huh?
No. One thing you cannot say about City Hall, staff competition against council. I mean, staff really can dance. Then you see Tom Perkins, Mary Soon, the mayor, you know, he cut off real quick. You know, he was there, but he restarted off. But, you know, on a good note, Home for the Holidays, this is my third annual event for Home for the Holidays. We kick it off at the beginning at Coach Kona's, and Frank and also Transportation Unlimited. They fed over 600 people, homeless people. They took their buses to the homeless shelter, picked them up at 6 a.m., brought them, and fed them, took them back. And that's inside the city of Dallas. And they do that for the last 17 years. So with no support from no corporation, just from him and that one sponsor. And that's Frank Jones and with Kusha Conan, and also Melvin Jackson with Transportation Unlimited. Will you come forward? And those are the two people who gave that Thanksgiving. And Jerry Shepherd said, how do you do it? I mean, you do it by great sponsors. And there's take many sponsors to do it. The city of Dallas, number one. And also the council, Jerry Allen, you know, you and Shepherd and the Mary Leopard and the city manager staff to come out. Katrina Keys, we've come forward with K-Strategy. She was one of the sponsors. Suzanne with Radio One to get the word out. We're also one of the sponsors. Dalton Lott with Jet Stella of Dallas. Mimi Johnson, AJ's Wrestling Council. South Texas Dental. Is someone from South Texas Dental here? Louise with Aztec Omega Contractor. Is Bob Walton here with Utilities for Trailer Dallas? Is anybody from Dr. Pepper's here? Yeah. And we also, you know, my right hand of crime, my wife, Marcelle Atkins, who always give out the beautiful jury. She was sponsored for the last 3 years. So, and also, we can't forget Demetria Thompson. She always, you know, called her last minute. She always show up. And remember, we started this 3 years ago. The first Home for the Holiday, we had 200 people. The second year, we have over 400. This year, even though in the rain, the temple is at 32 degrees, we still serve 455 families. And we also supported 28 families. 28 families in the city of Dallas. And we partnership with the Dallas Center School District to make sure those 28 families had a Merry, Merry Christmas. And this is not coming from the sponsor, it also comes from the city of Dallas, and some of my colleagues also help. And also, I'd like to bring Merle Leppers up here. You know, he always show up from Home for the Holidays. It would not be renounced if Mary Sue would not come up with her staff support Home for the Holidays, and Deborah Watkins, and also Tom Perkins, the dancer, and these people, Merle, if you want to say something, you always kick it off, and you're always there.
No, I would just say I can't wait till the executive session today. That's what I'm waiting for. Now, the only thing I would add is, Tanel, all of us appreciate the time and effort that you put into this. It is a great event each year. It has really become a hallmark within your district, and we're just appreciative that you would spend as much time and effort and bring people in throughout your district. From the homeless to your constituents to everybody, it's very much appreciated, especially during the holidays.
And one surprise, we got a person, Alvin Crenshaw, from Roosevelt, Duane.
There he is.
Now, Mary thought I was the fastest man in the world. Me and Alvin grew up together. He was the fastest world record. Come up, Alvin, in the quarter half mile sprint. World record. Hold it. Alvin Crenshaw. And the reason why I had Alvin come up, Frank had a home for the holidays, and he was homeless. And he showed up there, and he came out, and Duane, Roosevelt, you know, Frank, and you never know who you touch when you go out there and try to serve the people. And that's what the city is trying to do. We're trying to touch everyone. And this is a great story with Albert Crenshaw, someone we pulled him back. Doors, Michael Lee's working with him, trying to get him back in the system, and that's what it's all about. And Jerry Allen, Shepherd Cadane, and Von Seal, come on up. You was there, and Carolyn Davis, you was there last year. Come on, take a picture and enjoy Home for the Holidays. Thank you.
Mr. Atkins, while y'all are taking a picture, I did see number 26 from the Dallas Cowboys. Looks like he loaned his name and his face also to this, so we especially want to thank him. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
said we need to go. We need to get the job.
Okay, after all of that frolicking, the dancing, the excitement, the vibrancy, guess which group we're going to recognize now? You're right, it's the engineers. Let me... I'm not going to get through this stuff.
To come up and dance.
That's right.
Led by Mr. McGinn.
You better get up here. I'm not sure I'm going to get through this. Mark Boyd with LPA Environment, Jessica Baker with Half Associates, and a very familiar face, and that's Ramon McGinn with HDR. National Engineers Week began back in 1951 by the National Society of Professional Engineers, and it was in conjunction with President George Washington's birthday. President Washington was a military engineer and a land surveyor and is considered as the nation's first engineer. With this proclamation, we would like to recognize the engineers in our city, our nation, and across the world for their contributions to our community and for their dedication to improving our quality of life, for revolutionizing the way that we learn, live, work, and communicate, and for promoting a high standard of professional excellence. Here to accept the award are these individuals. And Ramon, can I ask you to come up here? This proclamation, in a very small way, recognizes the contributions of both your organization and engineers. And I can tell you, all of us understand, working in the city, but anybody in private enterprise, how important engineers, not only to what we've accomplished as a nation, but more importantly, to what we need to accomplish going forward. Your involvement is especially important in what you've done, but I also want to congratulate you because I know you're continuing to reach out, continue to try to get young people involved in engineering and sciences, and if we don't do that, we're going to suffer as a nation. So we appreciate what you're doing, especially on so many different efforts across the nation, be it public or private, but especially reaching out to kids and getting more kids involved and excited about engineering. So Ramon, if I could, I'll present this proclamation to you, representing all of your colleagues. And can I turn over to you for a couple of comments? Ramon, it's good to have you back.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor and council members, it's a pleasure to be here today. It's great to see you. The mayor has actually taken my speech and has said it much better than I ever could. I would like to emphasize, as the mayor indicated, that every year in February during President's Week, members of our profession do pause and gather to celebrate the accomplishments of our colleagues and to rededicate ourselves to the principles that guide our profession. On behalf of the fine engineers on your staff, and I see some of them here, Ms. Jordan, Ms. Puckett, Ms. Nix, Mr. Gasseran, Mr. Dyer, Ms. Harvey, and many others, as well as those of us in the private sector, we thank you very much for this recognition. And may I remind you that next week, during Engineers Week, if you happen to come across an engineer, would you stop, hug them, and thank them for what they do to make this world a little bit better. Thank you.
All right. Ramon, hold on 1 second. Ramon, stay at the microphone for just a minute. Some of the colleagues have some comments. Councilman Atkins.
You know, Ramon, it's a great pleasure, you know, for someone to leave the public sector, go to the private sector, and to make sure the public sector know how the private sector can support. And I think you as a leader to make sure you have that trend to bring communication together. Again, thank you for your service with the City of Dallas, but also thank you for your service on the private side also. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you very much, Mayor.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. We continue now with your morning speakers. Your first speaker this morning is Will Williams, will be followed by Warren Gilbert. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks, or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting, shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant at Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Each individual will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timers on both screens. When the numbers turn to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. You can address your comments to the chairs, Mayor Leppert. Again, your first speaker is Will Williams. Please state your name and address for the record, sir.
My name is Will Williams. My address is 1607 Acapulco Drive.
Thanks for
the reason I'm here today is that, first of all, I want to tell you about a complaint or concern. Then I'd like to make a recommendation. The complaint or concern that I have is that one of my neighbors complained about a car being parked out in front of my home. When they complained, the Dallas police showed up. They put a label on the car for us to respond within 24 hours or something like that. However, we did not see that. Because we did not see that, our car was towed a day or two later. The concern that I have, the recommendation that I have, rather, is that if something similar should happen in the future with anyone else, and that's why I'm here, is that I think it would have been more effective had the note been placed on my door or the mailbox. I'm one of the kind of people where I leave home out of my garage in the back, and the only time that I go out the front door is to answer the door or to get the mail. So I do think it would have been more effective on the door or on the mailbox. That's an expense, in my opinion, that could have been spared. In this day and economy, a lot of people are probably facing the same situation, and I think it would probably take maybe 15, 20 seconds to get to the door to place something there, and the expense would have been spared because I would have moved the car because I would have known about it. So that's my recommendation for the Dallas Police Department. I have no complaints with them following procedures, which is what they did, and I respect that. I just didn't know that the note had been placed on the car. That's all I have.
Yes, thank you so much, Mayor. Mr. Williams, my neighbor, my constituent, thank you for coming down. It is an effort to come down to City Hall. Unfortunately, this is the first that I have heard about this. If you would be so kind, if there are any issues, if you would bring it to the attention of my office, we would be more than happy to assist you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming
down.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Warren Gilbert.
Good morning. My name is Warren Gilbert, Jr. My complaint is my house. About April will be 3 years they've been, patching on my house. So I'm ready for them to continue and finish my house. Me and my wife, and there's a whole lot of stress that we under on account we sick in our house. It ain't finished. Around the walls, the air that's coming in and like the front door. Walk to the front door, brand new door, $800-something door up there, and you can look out the front door of my house. You just walk in there and look out the front of it. I signed a place with look on the city manager, send me a note talking about give me so many days. That's 2 years later about what could do to my house. They come out and patch it now. They patched on it 2 years. I think they work on that roof, raising the roof up, I guess about 3 or 4 times. Then they come back and tear it out, put something else back in it. But this time they got it looking pretty good. But the whole house was filling. You sit in there, go in the house, in the door, go in the bathroom, the door shut by itself. You ain't got to shut it. Front door, do the same thing. And you go to houses like it's done like this in my house. I'll let somebody, they had a good inspector out there, but they moved him. So when he found out all them complaints, well, they moved Mark Hickman or something. That was the name. He found all them complaints. Then they moved him out by said he didn't come back and do, they didn't let him do nothing else. They got Salisbury and about every inspector out there. My house still ain't, even the engineer been out there in my house ain't fixed yet. It ain't satisfied. It's a shame the way they done did us on our house. You send another inspector out there and you just go down the wall there and you sit there. You can't sit in the living room, let your feet there by free. On account of the air coming in. Had to put a blanket up under the couch to keep the air from coming in there to freeze your feet.
Good. Well, why don't I do this? Appreciate, first of all, you being down here and relating this to us. Unfortunately, we don't have the details. But what I'm going to ask you to do is stay over just a couple of minutes and visit with Mr. Gonzalez, who's our assistant city manager.
Yes.
That's responsible for home repair areas in addition to several others. And if you could just visit with him offline and give him a little information and see if we can help you. Appreciate
all right.
It. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it.
Mr. Gonzalez, if you stay seated just this way. Okay.
That concludes your speakers this morning.
The first item of business is the approval of the minutes of January 20th. If I could have a motion, Mr. Cadane, and a second, Mr. Newman, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed? Madam Secretary, I believe we got some boards and commissions.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Consideration of boards of appointments to boards and commissions. We begin with the individual appointments. To the Board of Adjustment, nominated is Robert M. Moore by Councilmember Coop. To the Civil Service Board adjunct members is Carl Cam Modecki, nominated by Councilmember Hunt. That concludes your nomination. Motion?
Motion, please.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Mr. Cadane and Mr. Caraway, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Any opposed, so ordered. We've got several briefings, and then we'll have an executive session on just a couple of cases. Our first briefing has to do with the CDBGs. Mary, do you want to give kind of an overview of that and kick it off?
This will be our briefing on the reprogramming and extensions that have come through our staff and through the CDC, and this will give you an overview of where we are as we begin the budget process of the CDBG budget for the upcoming year. I will tell you that it looks as if we will probably get a little more CDBG money in the upcoming year than we have in the past, not lots. But by incorporating this reprogramming money, that will be your whole budget to operate from, and we just want to go over those with you right quickly.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This morning's briefing will review the CDBG expenditure requirements and the city's compliance with those requirements, and then also we'll discuss the CDBG funds that we would then include in the 10-11 consolidated plan budget. HUD requires that the city or any of its grantees only have 1.5 times or less its annual allocation in its unspent grant balance. This is tested for the City of Dallas on July 31st each year, and should a grantee not be in compliance with this requirement, your next annual grant could be reduced by the amount that you exceed the requirement. The city was in compliance with this requirement on our last test date on July 31st of 2009. There have been two resolutions passed by the City Council related to the timely expenditure of CDBG funds. In 1993, a resolution established a spending policy which stated that all project funds should be obligated or encumbered within the 12 months of the beginning of the fiscal year in which it was appropriated, and that these funds should also be expended within 24 months of the beginning of the fiscal year when they were appropriated. Otherwise, an extension would be required to continue spending those funds for that purpose. In March of 2007, the City Council enhanced the criteria to determine the compliance and added some benchmarks to the existing policy. There were categories of CDBG projects established that are based on the intended use of funds. There were also time frames set regarding the obligation and expenditure of funds in each of these categories. But again, the City Council does have the authority to extend the funds for a purpose outside of the benchmark time frame. So there are four categories that were added: the ongoing programs, unspecified programs, public improvement projects, and Davis-Bacon restitution funds. I'll just walk through a little explanation of each of those. The ongoing programs, just those programs that are annually funded, they're very similar to what we include in the city's operating budget. If you were to look at the individual program line item details, you would see staff, supply, material cost, contracted service. In some of the programs, you see funds that are used to provide direct assistance to the low to moderate income clientele of the CDBG program. There are also HUD-specific categories, including public services, housing, economic development, and planning and program oversight. Two of the HUD categories have statutory maximum spending caps. Public services and planning and program oversight are both limited by HUD. Therefore, any extension of funds in these two categories really needs to be very carefully considered because we do not want to exceed those caps. Any unspent funds at the end of the fiscal year are generally intended to be reprogrammed. There is an exception to that for those funds that are just set aside for the direct assistance to the low and moderate income clients. Those would be programs like the home repair programs, replacement housing, funds set aside for relocation assistance. We do consider the extension of all the encumbered funds annually, and then again, all of the unobligated staff and contract costs would be reprogrammed. The second category of projects are nonspecific. There are not a lot of details when the project is originally budgeted. An example would be the residential development acquisition loan program. So there are 3 1-year benchmarks allowing time to identify a project, secure any additional financing that might be needed, and complete the design, and a year to initiate the implementation or begin construction on the project. The projects are evaluated annually, make sure they're still viable, and that if they need an extension, that those extensions all come to the council for approval. Public improvement projects, also called capital improvements, these are projects that you would see similar to what's in the city's capital budget. Projects such as street and sidewalk improvements, facility improvements, barrier-free ramps. The benchmarks for these also distinguish between specific location identified when the project's budgeted versus a non-specific project in designating the benchmarks. Again, the projects are evaluated each year, and any extensions do come to the council for approval. The final category are those projects which have Davis-Bacon restitution. The Davis-Bacon Act is a federal law that requires minimum wages be paid for certain construction work classifications. The city staff will go out and evaluate whether or not there were any violations in compliance with this act when the contractor was performing work. If there is a violation, the city or the contractor does need to contact and make restitution to any affected employees. We do not pay the contractor. Instead, we hold the fund and try to pay those back to those employees. We hold the funds for 3 years in escrow, and should the funds be unclaimed at the end of the 3-year period, then those are reprogrammed. So the presentation includes two attachments that list the manager's recommendations. There are 41 projects totaling $4.6 million that are recommended for extension, and 68 projects that the manager recommends reprogramming totaling $2.4 million. There is some detailed explanations in Attachment B that explains the rationale behind the recommendation. The Community Development Commission has a financial monitoring committee which reviewed all of the recommendations submitted by the city manager and made one recommendation to move from the extension list to the reprogramming list. some older unspent funds from the South Dallas Fair Park Minor Home Repair Program. Their rationale being that there are still current, more current funds available to spend in this program. The full CDC reviewed their committee's recommendation and approved it on January 7th. So the CDC's recommendations are also included in Attachment A, so you can see the two line items that differ from the manager's recommendations. So moving forward, the recommendation would be to approve the February, it should be 24th, resolution to authorize the extension of the funds. We also recommend that no decision be made at this time on any uses of the reprogramming funds. Instead, we would allocate those as a source of funds for the 10-11 budget. And the next steps in the budget process are, beginning on March the 4th, the city manager would provide a recommended budget to the Community Development Commission. They spend the month of March reviewing the manager's budget, asking questions. They may make some recommendations themselves. The CDC will recommend a budget to the City Council on April the 1st. Their recommendations, along with the manager's, would be briefed to the City Council on April 21st. The City Council also has an opportunity to make any amendments to the budget on May the 5th. We would preliminarily adopt the budget on May 12th and begin a HUD-required 30-day comment period, hold a public hearing on June 23rd, and then do the final adoption in anticipation of submitting the plan to HUD by August the 15th. So again, there are two attachments to the briefing that have the listing of the projects, the associated dollars with which are recommended either for extension or reprogramming, city manager's recommendation and also the CDC, and then attachment B has more explanation of those recommendations. And that concludes the presentation. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
The reason that we make this recommendation is that to wrap the reprogramming into the new budget is so that you can look at this as a whole. You'll have the new CDBG amount, you'll have the reprogramming amount, and you can consider the whole 20-some-odd million in one package, and we think this is the best way to go for you, and we'll be doing that really shortly. So,
okay. So we're going to see that again then as the package as a whole. Great. Ms. Margolin?
Thank you for the presentation. A few quick questions. On slide 7, it makes reference to 15% public service cap, and I was just wondering whether that was our cap or HUD's cap. HUD's cap. Okay, thank you. On slide 8, it says, it talks about, I guess I've wondered this for a while, so this is my opportunity to ask, that some of the programs include home repair, share, et cetera, replacement housing. How is the determination made how the funds are allocated among those different programs?
We make a recommendation to you in the budget, and y'all make the final
decision. So that's coming from?
Staff recommends a budget initially. That goes to CDC. CDC changes it, and we bring... And it comes back to staff, and we say, okay, we understand what CDC is doing. The last few years, we've brought back one budget. You could get staff budget, CDC budget, but the last few years, we've brought back one consolidated one, and then you make a final decision about that.
Okay. And then I guess Mary or whomever, we were told that there are two items that differ between the manager and the recommendation. Could you point out what those two items are?
Sure.
Here on the bottom of page.
Page
what? What? Give that number so you can put it up there, please.
Slide 13.
And we're being asked to decide which one we recommend or which one we accept at this point, or we're not being asked to do that today?
You can give us a preference. It will be in the item that you vote on. We did not recommend. We recommended extending these, and the CDC took them off the extension list.
Okay. All right. That's the end of my questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Allen, please.
So is it, we're recommending to the I think it was $2.5 million to reprogram that money into the 2010-2011 budget.
Yes, sir, which will be coming up next 2 months.
In the next 2 months, and then at that point, was it $20 million? Did I hear that?
It'll be 20-something million.
Have we ever figured or thought about, or maybe it's too simple, just taking that number and divide it by 14?
Well, except that you have to qualify by CDBG eligible areas.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah, we would all have those areas. So, but is that?
That's entirely up to y'all.
All right, just a thought.
Just kidding, please.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. My question was on the same line, at $2.4 million on the 68 projects. Y'all will decide which projects, or will we be able to see all 68 projects?
You will see all of it.
Pick from them.
We will make a recommendation, but you'll be aware of where it came
from. But we'll see all of the projects and where they came from.
There will be background in the material that shows you the projects that were considered.
Good. Thank you.
And you also want to work with your CDC rep.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins, please.
Yes, Mayor. I guess on the CBG, I'm looking at some of the items on the community prosecutor, and I know that, I talked to you earlier this morning. How are we going to refund the community prosecutor since we cannot use the CBG money to fund community prosecutors?
Well, we have funded them.
But the guidelines said that we cannot use CBG money to do that.
We haven't. We've been using other grant funds and general funds, and that will become a challenge next year because some of the grants run out.
So how much a budget would be on the community prosecutor? What is that budget?
I don't know specifically, but it's a good amount. We can get it. I know it's important to you. We'll be working on it in the budget process.
Okay. Now, since we cannot use that money for the community prosecutor, but also for the community code enforcement, when we split those services, why is that eligible and the community prosecutor not eligible?
Can you give more detail on that, Jean?
The community prosecutors are not eligible in the category that we had allocated to the house. We put the prosecutors in the housing category. HUD said you can use these programs with CDBG funds, but you need to put it in your public service category, which is the capped category.
That's the 15%
category. The 15% category. We spend over $1 million on community prosecutors, so that would mean that you'd have to select $1 million worth of other public service projects to come out of the public service cap in order to fund your community prosecutors.
Now, you won't get enough money to do this, but theoretically, when the whole pie gets bigger, which it will this year a little bit because the feds will give us more CDBG money, that brings your 15% up a little bit, too. It won't bring it up $1 million.
About 4%, 5%, something like that?
Probably less than that, two or three would be my guess.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Ms. Coop, please.
Mary, since I've been here, I've tried to understand the process, and I have some CD eligible areas in my district. One of the things that was my understanding was, and I'd like some information on it, not now, but later, my understanding was one of our after school programs was canceled in one of my CD areas for the year. I really don't understand the process and how I can get my area at Spring Valley and Coit into the process. And I know you say it's by your community development appointee and so on and so forth, but I as a councilman would prefer to know how to do that and know how to do that in this, if there is an opportunity between now and when we review the budget, how to do that. Okay, because I'm sure it's maybe going back to the community development board, but I as a council member want to know how to do that. Okay,
so your community development rep is where you need to go.
No, I as a council member want to know: is there an application that
a group would make?
That a group,
okay,
right.
We can bring you that.
I want to know that.
Okay,
and then I want to know how that process works at community development, because a lot of us have got community development folks that are not very experienced in that. And it's not fair to those of us who have community development eligible areas, some of the worst areas in Dallas, that have not received any funding ever ever in the history. So I want to know the process so I can understand it. I want somebody to come to my office, explain to me the process,
okay,
so I can understand it.
We can do that.
Thank you. For sure.
Ms. Davis, please.
Thank you, Mayor. And, Mary, I just want to say a couple of things. Listen to Linda Coop, and I've been on the CDBG Commission for about 4 or 5 years. For example, the South Dallas Park area is considered low income, below low income. And the federal government says we look at areas that's below income, say, are less than $50,000. So that's why an area like the South Dallas Park area, some areas of Mr. Caraway, some area of Vonsell, very, very little area of Vonsell, and some area of my colleague. That's why the government, that's why the government looks at those pocket areas, because they are considered very low, especially my district, South Dallas Fair Park proper, very low income. And HUD, and that's what federal money is designed for, to help those low income areas when it comes to housing. Now, in your area, if any area, any part of your area has $100,000 income, and I'm just saying, even though you might have some low pockets in it, you might have some low pockets within that area, the federal government looks at the whole area. And I do understand that you might have some low pockets in it. And so I'm just, and I could be wrong, Mary, on that. But I know, for example, even though in the South Dallas Fair Park area, we have some people that might be making $70,000, $80,000, $90,000, but the overall area is below $20,000. So that's one of the, you know, the deals when it comes to CDBG dollars. I want to talk about the minor home repair. Now, on the minor home repair, the 06, the 07, and the 07 and the 08, that's $102,000 that's going back into the general fund. Why is that?
That was the recommendation of the CDC to reprogram the funds.
It is not going back into general funds. What they recommended, not our recommendation, but what they recommended was you put it back in to be reprogrammed.
Okay.
But not in the general fund, in CDBG, so that when you do next year's budget, you can use it for CDBG.
Okay. I want to say this. I'm having a senior Valentine Expo. I'm expecting about 300 seniors. I need someone, and I know that this is minor home repair, perhaps for seniors, or is it not?
It is not exclusively for seniors, but it includes seniors, and we would be happy to be part of that event to see about passing out information on the eligibility of that program.
Okay, and that's good, AC, because the need is there. Now, with the minor home repair, AC, what can they use the money for?
Councilmember Davis, the South Dallas Fair Park money can be used for the major system repair program.
Uh-huh.
That's the program where we look at four major systems. If two of those four systems need to be...
What are those systems, please?
Roofing, electrical, plumbing, and heating cooling.
Okay. Now, roofing, perhaps, and some of the houses, do you guys have a breakdown what a basic roofing cost might be?
Ms. Davis, it would depend upon the size of the home and the condition of the roof.
Okay.
We do have our own estimates for the areas of the roof that we do repair.
Okay. Is there a cap? Somebody said it's an $8,000 cap.
For the South Dallas Fair Park program, those repairs in that area are capped at $8,000.
Okay, if you have an and I need to talk, AC, to you guys about the minor home repair. If you have a plumbing cost, see, first of all, it's too low. You got four major systems that can run over $8,000. So if you have a house that needs $10,000 worth of plumbing work, the $8,000, and it's set up for failure because it's not enough money.
We never deny repairs in that area based upon that $8,000 cap. We always look to the other citywide funds and add $7,000 so that the repairs in that area are treated the same way as the citywide program, and
mm-hmm.
the cap is $15,000. We just use $8,000
mm-hmm.
from this particular fund
okay.
and $7,000 from the other funds.
Okay, okay, good, good. So it will be enough for those four major systems, which is the roofing, because it tends to run a little more than that. Okay, I would love, and so right now AC for the 09, 08, 09 is $178,000.
Yes.
Okay, that anybody, including seniors, can use this year.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
They have to fall within the other categories of eligibility, but yes.
Okay, and I want to, and then I'll be finished. The other category that they need to fall into is what? No back taxes?
There's numerous eligibility criteria, but back taxes is one. They have to, the house has to be free of liens. There's different requirements that they as individuals and the house have to conform to. We can work through anybody, and that's the purpose of having that information out at those events.
Okay, I'm having one on the 11th for Valentine's Day, and clearly we've already got a call. There are about 350 seniors there, and I need someone there, and I need someone to talk to them about applying for the minor home repair.
We'll be there.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Mary, I would agree with Ms. Coop. I would, too, also like, prior to this coming to the council for programming, reprogramming, and that sort of thing, I'd like to be better informed about that so I have a handle on how organization access and what the process is, because I don't feel like I'm 2 years behind Linda as far as time in the council, but I'm equally not clear about the process by which this goes through. And I remember last year, you know, I didn't ask as many questions maybe as I should have, so I'm going to this year. So that's number one. When on the grid sheet it says NDS, what is that? What's that acronym for?
It means non-district specific.
Meaning what?
It means that the program is open to any Dallas resident who meets the income criteria as opposed to living in a specific area of Dallas.
Okay, so the program is agreed to?
No. Well, let me give you an example of that. If they were having a summer program at the African American Museum, those kiddos could come from all over the city.
Okay.
They would have to have documentation that showed that they were of the income level that was appropriate.
Okay. Because it looks like, now maybe I'm wrong, but it looks like there's a lot more NDSs this time around than in previous. No?
I don't think necessarily so. But
a lot of the public services are that non-district specific because
yeah.
the individuals who use the service can come from anywhere in Dallas. It may not be right near their house where the location is, but they can come from
okay.
anywhere.
The whole concept of extension versus reprogramming, if the CDC and the managers recommending and the council still sees fit to extend, that means the money stays in the program. It just gives additional time for the program to be executed.
Yes.
Okay. Versus reprogram, what you're recommending on your last slide was to put it back into an undesignated
yes,
category.
But you see, there's about $2.4 million recommended to put in an undesignated category for your budget planning for the next budget,
okay.
which will be next month. But
and
there's also $6.8 that we're saying go ahead.
I see the value of that, and I'm processing that. I guess the question is, why weren't the programs all executed? Why?
Well, there's a wide variety of reasons, and I think there's some information on the chart, and anyone in particular that you're interested in, we can give you more detail.
The old adage of use it or lose it would apply.
Well, there are good reasons for not being able to, and so CUD gives you a time frame that is a time limit, and so if you're still within that time limit and you've
okay.
got good reasons and it was a good intended program to begin with, we recommend extending. Now, again, that's something that you can pull back on.
Okay. Am I to interpret, this says $56 million is the total amount of the appropriation.
Is that the total
that's
funds?
That's not 1 year, I don't think.
That's a combination of years because of extending and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
What's the longest time period that we can extend? 2 years?
It is 2 years, I believe, isn't it?
Well, each year is a one-year extension, so these programs are extended through September 30th of 2010, and then they're evaluated annually.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mayor. Please forgive me for being absent for part of your presentation. If you have covered what I'm going to ask, then I'll have to ask you to forgive me for being repetitive. On slide 7, the very bottom, extension of funds in these two categories, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that true?
When we do our annual budget, we budget to the cap. So when we report to HUD, we have to report on all the expenditures for that year. So if we extend and add two dollar amounts, add to the projects in those two capped categories, we could potentially go over the cap in that fiscal year. So if I have a program that's funded on an annual basis, I don't want to extend the prior year's funds because it could add to the pot for public services and possibly go over what we can spend under that cap.
Okay. On Appendix A, I don't see pagination on Appendix A. If it's there, I've missed it. I have two questions. One, is fiscal year 06-07 housing assistance support? What is housing assistance support, and how is the mechanism that we've kept the money since 06?
So you're looking at line number 86?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So there are... So it's been previously extended.
First of all, what is it? What is housing assistance support?
Those are staff costs, city staff costs in the housing department to administer the various housing programs.
All right.
And they
and
have,
this funding has been around since 06, is that correct?
Yes, that was the annual allocation for that program in 06-07. There's currently an encumbrance for about $75,000 that the department has requested to extend. They are finishing up some work on one of their computer systems.
But we can hold that money by extending?
Yes, ma'am.
Since 06?
Yes.
All right. Also in Appendix A, it's the very next page.
Okay.
It's line 98, Public Works and Transportation,
mm-hmm.
Sidewalk Improvement. Why is this amount so little?
The sidewalk improvement programs were generally added by city council amendment during the budget process, and
they're kind of leftovers at the end of the budget process, and you say there's $50,000 unaccounted for, and you say I want to put it in sidewalks. That's one reason.
So if we have leftovers somewhere else, we could put it here?
Well, yes, you could. I'm just saying that's normally how it did. This one doesn't normally start at the beginning of the process. This is something that's added at the end, yes.
All right. Okay. Those are my questions. I have a suggestion as to Ms. Coop and Mr. Newman's questions. I wonder if we could be briefed on your questions at Quality of Life.
Or the other thing we can do is brief the whole council if you want to.
Either one.
Okay. Well, we'll just program a briefing for the whole council. It's pretty long and complex, and that way you can all hear it.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you very much.
Our next briefing is in regard to the communications plan for the renovations of Love Terminal, the terminal at Love Field. AC?
Thank you. For the last several years, you've been hearing about the planned improvements at Love Field with regards to the terminal. This improvement is going to be, in essence, an entire replacement of the current facilities. In about 5 years, October of 2014, we will have a wonderful facility. Between now and that date, it's going to be less wonderful. We're going to have a lot of construction that's going to be going on. There's going to be the potential for a lot of disruption. Our job is to see about minimizing that disruption, and one of the ways of making sure that that is minimized is having a good communications plan to make sure that passengers know how to work their way through that. This morning you're going to be hearing from one of the assistant directors, Diego Rincon, who is going to be delivering the status of where we're at with that program. Diego.
Thank you, AC. Good morning. I'm very excited to be here this morning because it's a fantastic product that we're sharing with you today. It's the result of a lot of hard work, and I'd like to recognize at least a few individuals that are in the room. Elva stepped out, but Karen, she's with URS, and Michael Gonzalez, who's sitting in the audience, he's with El Creative, which is a small firm in Dallas, city of Dallas proper, that has been helping us in define what it is that we want to tell the people in our approach. As AC mentioned, we're going to be going through a program that's going to be quite complex. We're going to be keeping a main terminal open during construction, and all of you have traveled through airports where construction has been happening, and sometimes it's not the most pleasant environment. What we're trying to do right now is avoid that. It is going to be disruptive, but what we want to do is we want to make sure that people at least have an experience that tells them what's going on. There's nothing worse than seeing the construction site and not knowing what's happening. So very quickly going through what we're going to try to do is tell you a little bit about what we're doing. We're going to go through a little bit of a project overview very briefly, what our approach was, some of the elements that were developed through the process, some of the alternatives that we have been thinking about for information delivery, and then what are the next steps, what are we thinking about as we move through the program. Very quickly, in the project overview, I just wanted to highlight again that our capital development program is three different elements. We have the Love Field Modernization Program, which is currently what we're working on, really focusing on. The other element that is still out there and that we will be discussing this year is the Automated People Mover System, and then the Ongoing Capital Improvement Program. And that has to do with our taxiways, our airfields, our runways, all the projects that we would do regardless of the LFMP, regardless of the APM. Some of them have linkages and some of them are significant. We just started the reconstruction and extension of Taxiway Lima, which is about a $13 million construction program, and that got kicked off last month. So we're very excited about all of these elements. Going into the project overview, again, some of the highlights, we're undergoing a massive transformation. As AC had talked, as mentioned, it'll be very disruptive for a long time. But we want to bring this out to the people and tell them in advance what it is that we're doing. So we want to educate the public and the stakeholders about all of these changes. We want to connect with the audience, and we really want to tell them what it is that we're doing. And the first step is basically reaching out to the community and sharing with them what our intentions are. Again, as AC mentioned, the ultimate goal is completion in October 13 of 2014, and that's tied to the Wright Amendment repeal, which is exactly at the same date. I want to bring these two dates to notion because that's exactly what we're targeting, and that's where we're going. What our approach was in public information. We really need to manage the visual impact of all of these construction areas during construction because, again, we really want to make sure that even though it's going to be difficult and it's going to be disruptive, it's not necessarily that painful. We also want to be able to relay that information in a very aesthetically pleasant manner to the passengers and to the citizens and basically for the public to understand what it is that we're doing, why we're going through the pain. Because the airport has to remain open during construction, we're going to have a lot of public areas that are going to have large drywalls and partitions and et cetera and corridors that are probably not the best thing that you would want to travel through. But we want to make sure that we can do whatever we can with that. And again, we didn't want to just have the alternative. We didn't want to have the typical part in our dust sign, which is the construction ferry sign, part in our dust, and it looks like an afterthought most of the time. Some of those elements, if you can go back to that slide, Elva, some of these are attempts to tell people what it is that we're doing. But they just don't really convey the message, and what we wanted to do was something that's a little bit better than this. We developed 3 to 5 concepts that basically bring the LFMP project to life, and they match the changes in our construction phases. We're going to have several construction phases, and we're going to go from construction 1, construction phase 2, phase 3, and phase 4, and it's going to affect different parts of the terminal and the airfield in different times. And if we, and what we really started to focus on is how do we combine this with what it is that we're doing. So we center around the evolution of Love Field. The name itself is something that we just can't ignore. We'll try to teach people about the history of the airport and a little bit of the impact that the airport has on its citizens. This graph shows a little bit of what I'm going to be talking about. We have an umbrella concept, and the umbrella concept is what you see as Love Evolution, and basically it encompasses the 4 phases of construction. The first phase is pretty much the first phase that we just finished. We inaugurated 2 buildings, the East Satellite Building and the General Use Building, which is a cargo building, and we're about to enter into phase 2, which is right now what we would call Love Leads the Way. In phase 3, we would call something that centered around rekindling your love with the airport. And then finally, as we're ready to open and unveil it, we call it Love Equals. Hopefully, at the end of this evolution, we'll have a new image of the airport. And this is a program that will also lead us into branding the airport or delivering a new image around it. Some of the graphical elements that we came around, some of the products of this are included in the bags that you see in front of you. We've explored some of the options of how do we reach out to our passengers as they're going through the terminals. What are the best things to remind them that we're actually doing something? In there you will see a brochure that's about this size. And this is the intent of this is to give you the 5-minute elevator speech that you always seek. You always need to know what are the highlights of what it is that we're doing. So we produce some of these to basically be able to tell everybody in the community what it is that we're doing. I mentioned that we're about to go into phase 1, which is probably Love Leads the Way, and some of the graphical elements have to do with a plane taking direction, flowing out of the heart of love. So we're very excited about some of those pieces and trying to show some of those elements as well. These are just some options that we've been exploring of what we could do with all of these logos and where we could place them and how we could actually have some impact with the passengers and the public. I mentioned about rekindling your love. This is one of the more heartfelt ones, I think, and it's one that actually is pretty exciting because it tells people, well, you know, we understand you love the airport, and the comment that we've been hearing for years is it needs an upgrade. Well, now is the time to rekindle your love. Find out what it is that we're doing for you and bring it back and re-learn that experience. This is just a sample banner of what we would be able to do. And finally, at the end, as we're wrapping up the program, we start talking about Love Equals. And basically, it's a very simple concept that has a lot of infinite possibilities and a theme to the growth of the airport. It's very simple, it's very general, and basically allows you to basically just wrap up something that says Love Equals whatever you want it to be. But ultimately, it's in a very heartfelt and motivational way. This is a sample of just something that we were thinking about because our main lobby is going to have a very large drywall somewhere that we would just be able to actually tell people what it is that our image is going to be. What is behind the construction wall? And that's one of the elements that we would have. And this is just an image of that. If you would see, we would probably put that, and that's just a concept of where that drywall would be. And passengers, as they're going through an open checkpoint, they hear all the construction and the banging behind it, and that just gives them an image of what is happening behind that wall. Again, just another image of that. Other examples of how we would use that. And then the Love Equals, as we start wrapping it up, even in some options of how we can go actually beyond and outside the airport to actually tell the citizens of Dallas what it is that we're doing, how we're ready to open that. Some of the alternatives that we talked about include, again, it's just whatever the imagination will bring. You can do it at the entrance to our airport.
It can be everywhere pretty much in within the terminal complex or extend out to the city if we really wanted it to do it that way. Information centers, motion graphics. The promotional items are the elements that are in front of you, and those are the easiest to develop, honestly, and that's why we have some of those samples, and we've offered them to you today. And just thinking ahead of what it is that we need to be doing, this is part of our airport operational readiness and the public information strategy. And basically, it's the first step in making sure that people know what it is that we're doing, leading to the final step, which is basically creating a new image of what the airport is will be. At the end of the evolution, we will have a new identity. And this is hopefully what this will bring up. And again, just highlighting the interesting element of this, that Love Evolution also works quite well. And we will target that as well. And we do have brochures in Spanish, and we're targeting in a bilingual effort. With all that said, if there are any questions, we're more than happy to answer them.
Terrific. Let me head off kind of two things, both related. One is the cost side of it. You want to walk through that. In other words, the cost part of the construction project. The construction project then weaved in to the rates that will be charged to the airlines, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, this isn't going to come out of the operating funds of the city.
There's a number of different avenues that we've been exploring. Southwest, when we've talked to them, they love it so much that their advertising group and marketing group have actually said, can we use it? And said, well, let's talk about it. So that's one element. The second element is that the construction team, they have as part of their construction offer, you know, that they put barricades. We basically have gone and taken a step and said, well, we'll give you the identity. You just make sure that we implement this somehow. And there's other avenues to do it, and we'll explore pretty much every avenue that we can.
I think the short answer is that, no, we're not going to have to be paying for it. The airlines are going to be paying for it.
That's what I want to do. In one way or another, and again, if we can sell pieces of it, that's even better. But the reality of it is it's part of a project cost. And in large part, this airport or any other airport where there's construction going on, you would have the same type of expenditures largely trying to use this as ways to communicate what's happening, make sure people are going in the right directions, change flows of traffic, all of those sorts of things, which become very important clearly to the construction people, but even more important to our passengers that are using that airport during construction.
Absolutely. And what Diego is making reference to is that there might be some opportunities to enhance and to bring additional revenues while we're doing this. But it is all ultimately paid for by the airlines and not by the taxpayers.
Appreciate that. Linda, please. Let's go.
I think, well, first of all, I think the program looks great. I love the play on the words. I love the, you know, feel the love and all that kind of stuff. I think that's great. And this really is a question for AC or Dan. Really and truly, the terminal itself, Southwest Terminal, and then I think we've got, who else is flying out of there right now? Is it Continental? But they're not flying, right? Can you please come up to the podium? Thank you. Do they fly out of, you know, the Southwest Terminal, then there's a little piece of another terminal that Continental flies out
of. Right, Southwest operates out of the West Concourse, and Continental and Delta currently operate out of the East Concourse.
Okay. My understanding was that the Southwest Terminal, I know for sure, there's nothing, it's going to be completely torn down, so there should be no remodeling of that area because it's all going to be an extension as you come in and go through the security of that area. As the main terminal, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
That is correct until such time as we phase the opening of the new concourse and we start closing gates down on the West Concourse to transfer them
that's
over.
That's my question. Okay. So you're not going to all do that. That has to come in a phased, operation.
We're beginning 5 years of construction.
Right.
Now, and during that 5 years, there's going to be, you know, different phases. We'll enter into the phases, as Diego mentioned, and each phase will have different impacts on the travelers.
Okay. Then my suggestion to you, if you're going to do that, and I'm assuming you're going to close down the gates at the very end first.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
I mean, that would be the logical way to do it. Okay. You know, I've mentioned this to you before, the cleanliness of the area, the cleanliness of the bathrooms. I understand you can't redo the floors or you can't redo the carpeting. You're going to be throwing those away. Right now, though, still, in my opinion, and in the opinion of a lot of the flyers, I'm out there every week, you know, they still see the dirty windows and so on and so forth. And if you'd like me to, I'd come out there with you and show you. I'm serious, Dan. We've had this conversation before. I was in that little short area that goes from the when you come out of all of the gates, and then you cross over into the A parking lot, and then you walk through the A parking lot and go into the B, you know, go out in one door and out the other. It was rather unsightly. I see in here that part remains, or it looked like it did. Maybe these graphics aren't exactly true to form. But still, it's important to, I think, our traveling public that they're not getting the short shrift on this when we start the construction. I think that, quite frankly, is one of the most important factors, that they still feel like that just because they've taken out, you know, gate 14 away, that they can still, you know, that we get to be a new one, you know. But the rest of the remaining gates are still treated with care and professionalism, and I'm very concerned about it, and I just want to make sure that we have that understanding, and I'd like you to come to my office and talk to me about that just a little bit, if you don't mind, or we can talk about it afterwards.
We'll do it
here today. Okay.
That's a good point. I think it's a real challenge because sometimes we kind of lose sight of the ball, focus on the big dollars of construction, and don't keep as Linda said, the cleanliness of the remaining terminal up to standards. So that's a good point. Mr. Newman, please.
Thank you, ma'am. A good presentation. I think it's very important, given that we're in the transportation business, own the airport, have a long-term vested interest in the airport, that we do our best. And I think this really, I mean, I looked at this briefing originally and I said, the city came up with this? This is, you know, that was a compliment, Mary. But I mean, I didn't hear what she said, but I'll just keep talking. Okay, now
actually,
I'm
it's all the better you didn't.
Okay. Okay. Was it a comment directed towards me?
No.
Oh, okay. Wait a minute, we're going to spar. No. She hasn't punched me today yet. Normally she punches me, so that maybe better punch. No. Oh, there you go, Dwayne. I didn't feel it. Thank you, Ron. Anyway, in all seriousness, this is very good. And gentlemen, this is a nice step forward. This, in my opinion, and so I'm not surprised that Southwest is excited about. That's a good thing. We are long-term partners with Southwest. This is an important element of Dallas, and it's an old airport, and we need to figure out how to make an old airport not look old, but look friendly, look convenient. I mean, when the first time I went on slide number 23, the first time I looked at it, I didn't notice that was a Mirage. I thought, oh, that's cool. Wait a minute, I haven't seen that. So I think that you're heading in the right direction. I think it's, as Ms. Koop says, it's sometimes the small things the travelers notice, not necessarily the large, grandiose things. And I think a lot of what she's going to is the small things that, you know, give a sense of, you know, this is a place that I want to be in or not travel through. I'm pleased about the direction you're headed. I saw some of the street banners. I don't know what you call them, these banners and others. How far outside the airport proper are we thinking about putting those?
We spoke with our public information office, and the city does have areas available on lampposts within the city. And
I'm part of my location. Slide 26. Okay.
And this was one of those concepts that we actually explored. So the city does have areas available.
So how far away from the airport proper?
I don't really know exactly the locations. I think there are some specific areas on Cedar Springs that there may be some of these that are located.
I don't know where. I think that there's value in not having this outside of the specific internal of the airport. I mean, if you're already there, you don't necessarily need it. It's what you want to draw people in. It's the excitement. Ooh, what's going on at Love Field? That sort of thing. Mr. Weber said this is a 5-year construction project. Okay, so, you know, like the Trinity project, you got to manage expectations. Now, the Trinity project is more than 5 years, but we're still trying to manage expectations. In this case, we need to manage some expectations of our customers and our citizens. So part of the signage makes sense, too.
That's absolutely. And I want to make sure it is not going to be just contained within the airport.
Yeah,
property.
That would
be, it is going to be out. The locations have not been determined, but it could be a quarter, a half mile away as people come in trying to deliver a message that, one, changes on the way, and secondly, how to cope with it. With respect to the terminal, every bit of the terminal is going to be either replaced or touched in a significant way. So that's all going to change. The point about in the interim, we need to keep up the maintenance and keep that focus, but it's all going to change.
Okay. Well, my whole point, Mayor, was that I think that we're heading the right direction. This is a good step forward. Maybe DFW will get a little jealous.
I think some of these downtown would be great. I mean, just kind of bring it downtown. Now, Mary tried to run up and say, how about DFW? I'm not sure we'll get
well, that. But Mayor, absolutely.
But at least
coming
downtown,
I mean,
I think would be great.
I mean, Love Field has a lot of competitive advantages being within the city airport, so I think it makes a lot of sense. AC downtown is not too far away.
Mr. Kadane will be at the DFW board meeting. He can work that out tomorrow. Anybody else? Thank you. Mr. Tissy.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just need to, Mr. Newman was asking on slide 19. He didn't know what those were, those planes that were on slide 19. Can we go to 19? Hello?
Oh, whatever.
Yeah, those actually have propellers, Dave. And they're little things that go around in the thing. Yeah, okay.
Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah. Answer me. One question, AC. Where is the liability to the city on this project?
The overall liability, yes, or this program that we're briefing?
The program, the building
overall,
of this terminal.
The overall program that we have for the reconstruction of the terminal space is ultimately going to be borne, if at the end of the day, backed up by Southwest Airlines.
Right. Okay. So we're building this new terminal. The terminal we've got. Tell me this, are we going to be able to move more traffic with the new terminal?
Yes.
Or are we at capacity now and we can improve that?
We're, as to whether or not we're at capacity or not is, today is not really, what we are going to be building is a facility which will be able to grow to about double what we're handling today.
Good.
And,
okay.
And that's.
Okay, that's what I wanted to hear. Thank you.
Yes.
Terrific. Mr. Atkins?
Just one quick question. We're doing so much reconstruction at Love Field. Is Dallas Decker Airport still a relief airport for Love Field?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And we've got a master plan that calls for an extension of one of the runways and for development of aeronautical facilities on the west side of the airport.
Well,
that master plan probably needs to be updated before too many more years.
And that's what I'm leading to, you updated, but also we're doing so much convenience. You know, we got so many private planes going into Love Field, and so Love Field is a short distance to downtown, but also Dallas Executive Airport also a short distance. So to me, you know, we're doing a lot of construction. We could send some of those planes to another airport to build that airport up, you know. So what are we trying to market at to say, okay, pilots, you know, you can go to Dallas Executive Airport?
Yes, whenever there's an inquiry at Love Field for development, we always bring up Executive Airport and try to encourage
but I'm
them
not talking about
that.
Inquiry. I'm talking about, you know, since this construction work will be going for 5 years,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we volunteered information. You know, what I'm saying is that, you know, when you got Southwest flying around and you got these small airports, it's very, very cost conscious, and they burn more fuel flying around and can't out land. And if they're trying to save money, you say, hey, by the way, we do got relief airports over here at Dallas Tech Airport, which you can get downtown within 5 to 10 minutes, the same time at Love Field. I think just it's a marketing tool because we have not put dollars in marketing the Dallas Tech Airport. We got so much money over there, the new terminal building, the new restaurant coming up, you know, we got the best infrastructure. We got an ILS system over there. We got all the amenities that we need. So I think some of the private plane need to know we do have another airport close to downtown.
You're absolutely right. The growth in the air traffic that we're looking at Love Field is going to be principally, if not entirely, commercial air.
Right.
That's going to present a problem with respect to the conflicts or potential conflicts with general aviation traffic. Therein lies the opportunity and what you're speaking to. And we're needing to take advantage of that to market to the other facilities that we do have.
Thank you very much.
You know, I'll throw it in. I think to your question, Janelle, one thing that you may pick up on is it may be worth doing some research to say, okay, what are the preferences? What are the issues? I mean, again, aside from either a council, long ways away, you being closer, but still not to the point of the pilots having to select FBOs and that sort of thing, to actually do some research and say, okay, what do we need to do? Let's make sure that we're addressing the needs on a relative basis of love versus executive, or just more generically, Airport A versus Airport B. Is it a lack of FBO? Is it a lack of additionals? Is there a perception issue? Those sorts of things, which may guide us in decision making a lot more than us just playing kind of brainstorming back and forth.
Well, with Mer, the reason why I say that, we got a Super Bowl coming. Yeah. And there's so many of private planes, and if you look at Allison Airport, you know, they got traffic with DMV, they got all this problems. We're not marketing. You know, we got a good tool. We need to market the Super Bowl, you know, the NBA All-Star. There's a whole lot of private plane coming in the All-Star.
No question. My point is, let's make sure that we're doing it based on facts. Because I know when Super Bowl was in Tampa, they literally closed a runway because they had parked the planes on that active runway. They didn't have any other place to put them. So there's some real challenges that we've got, but it'd be nice to get a fact base that says, you know, what goes into the selection process if we don't, and it sounds like from the conversation that we're groping with it, we don't have a good, and make sure that we're addressing that in the right way if we are trying to push traffic from executive to executive vis-a-vis other airports in the region.
And Mara, by saying that, you look at Dallas Edgar Airport, we're not in our traffic DFW, Allison Airport is, you know, and there is, they've got a problem. No, algebra. I mean, the traffic. I mean, they do got the traffic. The DFW is not in the pathway of
but that begs
airport.
The question even more then, why do they want to jump into that when there might be an option that, at least to us, appears to be more viable?
Right.
Well, let's find that out and get a little bit better.
And I'd like to make two points. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I'd like to make two points. First, we're wrapping up a strategic business plan for Executive Airport, and we'll be bringing that to the Transportation Committee in the coming months. In addition, the Department of Aviation is fully engaged in the Aviation Action Team of the host committee of the next year's Super Bowl. So we're working with the committee, we're working with all of the airports in how the area airports will accommodate the additional 4,000 aircraft that will be in the DFW area.
And again, I think the point that Mr. Atkins and I are making, just when you come back with that, make sure that it's analytically driven, that it's got the research behind it, because my sense is we're still not where we need to be.
Right.
We would perceive more advantages than there are. If there's perception issues, then that's a marketing piece. If all of a sudden we're not marketing, I don't know. You know, when a pilot comes in, do they get a free car at Love, but they don't get it, or other airports, they don't get it. I mean, let's just make sure that we've got a good understanding of what it is. Then we can formulate the options. Ms. Cooper, do you want to add anything?
Just to say, I concur with my colleague, Tanel, because, and Mr. Jatinski just said that DFW is going to pave some extra runway and so on and so forth to park these planes. But if you've ever been to anything that's got, you know, as much air traffic as going to come in, you're here, even Aspen, when they have their festivals and stuff, I mean, they need parking for these small jets everywhere. They park them, you know, it really is quite an interesting way that they do it and line them up out there. I think there could be a real market for Dallas Executive during that, and too bad the NBA All-Star game, we didn't think of this sooner, because there'll be a lot of private jets flying in here, and I think not only to park them on the runway, to service them, obviously, to also provide for their pilots an additional amount of service, food, whatever. Right, exactly. It's easy to get there. It's a lot easier, really, quite frankly, to get from Dallas Executive the back way into Arlington than it is to go from DFW trying to get into Arlington during the Super Bowl.
That's a good one.
I concur with that.
Yeah. Mr. Tiffy.
Yeah, just one comment, Mr. Mayor and colleagues. I think maybe what we ought to do is try to be a little bit more proactive in this and go out and sell the fact that we've got Dallas Executive, we've got Love, and do some work, Mr. Weber, on how many planes can we park at Dallas Executive, how many, you know, and so forth, and give them the benefits of the locations, you know, travel time and so forth, rather than us just being, you know, reactive and sitting back and waiting till all those planes land I mean, we obviously have a list of all the high hitters that are going to be coming to the Super Bowl. Somebody must have it. I mean, they don't just get in their plane Saturday morning and say, let's just fly to Dallas. So, you know, we know who the customers are. Let's go after them and market the fact that, you know, we're there and do, maybe try to do some special things for them while they're here.
But, and I guess the only point that I want to make is let's make sure we do know who the customers are.
Right.
Is it the company selecting it? Is it the pilots? Is it an outside agency? Is it the FBO? And then what are the factors that lead to that? And, again, you may very well know. You just need to communicate it. But it's got to be fact-based, and I'm not sure we know. Appreciate it. When did you expect him to come back to us with the strategic plan?
The strategic plan should be finished just any time now, and we'll schedule with the Transportation Committee in one of the couple upcoming meetings.
So kind of within a 30...
In a couple of, in 2 months.
Okay.
Within 60 days.
Yes.
Now, may I ask something? We're talking about the All-Star Game. The All-Star Game is going to be here next...
It's 2 weeks.
It's too late for the market All-Star. So
nearly all of those decisions, I'll bet, have already been made.
Yeah, they've already been made. So,
I think one thing, some people are talking the Super Bowl. I think that's fine. That's a year. But I was talking almost more broadly that says, can we position executive differently? Are there different amenities that we don't have that we need to be competitive, that sort of thing? But really push it even further out.
Because we done missed all the I know what you're saying, but all the stuff, everybody likes the All-Star Games.
I think the All-Stars, we probably influenced some things on the Super Bowl. And, again, a relatively small number of Jets actually has a pretty good dollar number attached to it.
So and I have one more question. Do we have, Mary, do we have the money? Because I hear everybody talking about the marketing. And are you kind of like the spokesperson for us to negotiate these things? I'm just asking. I don't know.
Negotiate what?
Well, when we're talking about for its marketing with
aviation.
I'm
sorry, I'm not understanding the question. They had a marketing company that helped them with this plan.
Okay. Okay.
And then we'll move forward with this plan as it's outlined.
Well,
just one quick question. You know, if you understand about pilot, I don't think we have not missed the deadline. The people who come to the NBA All-Star Game is probably the same people who come to the Super Bowl. And since they're here, you know, majority, I mean, you look at some of the higher players, you know, the corporation, the corporate sponsors, you know.
Yeah,
so you still got a market to a contact. So we need to just get a list of who did show up.
Okay.
You know.
Fair enough.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll move on to the next one, which is the one-day update.
You're going to have some overlap.
Mary, go ahead, whenever you're
ready. Thank you. Good morning again, Mayor and members of Council. I'm happy to have a few moments now to catch you up on what's going on with the One Day Dallas program. Just to remind you all, One Day is the city's once-a-week garbage, once-a-week recycling collection service that is going citywide on March 1st, collection on the same one day of the week. You know, it began as a mayor's task force project in 2005 with the purpose of encouraging recycling throughout the city. At that time, our recycling rate for our residential population was about 3%. The task force believed we could make it 30% by 2011, and that's a goal we're working on now. One Day is intended to fit your residents' need for disposal much better than twice-a-week garbage and every other week recycling. And as you've all heard, we're having a reduction of our operational costs for that. Just in this budget year, we have $2 million worth of savings. That translates into a reduction in the sanitation fee. And next year, we expect to see $1.6 million in savings. I wanted to tell you that since the 2005 Mayor's Task Force report, we've started the pilots back in 2005. They're now 4 years old in four different neighborhoods, now a fifth neighborhood in Oak Cliff. Since then, we've had a phase one started 2 years ago in 2008 in far north Dallas. Phase two started just a year ago in northwest Dallas. Both have been very successful. Also last year, the Keyswood neighborhood began its own starter initiative that's been remarkably successful, and it's providing leadership for the rest of Oak Cliff on how to do one day. In April, I provided you a briefing. In August, but we reviewed the entire sanitation budget in a briefing, and at that time, we're projecting the $2 million in cost savings if we brought one day citywide. Council adopted that budget citywide, and we reduced the sanitation fee by 64 cents at that time. I've been able to update you a couple times since then on how we're rolling out the informational process so our residents are aware of what's going on with one day. And that countdown is on, and I put the calendar up to let you see we're less than 30 days away from our start date of March 1. So what have we done so far? Well, we have revised all of our collection routes, and we've set the new one day of service for the rest of the city. We've reviewed routes with council members, especially for folks who had concerns about day switched overs and alley to curb service. We've arranged community meetings and sent out this green flyer that all of our residents, affected residents, received. So it listed 42 meetings, but we have over 65 or 70 meetings that we're conducting citywide in addition to these. And we started the interactive website. It's a very easy website. It's onedaydallas.com, and it has all the information you could want on it. We opened up a call center in conjunction with 311. Our call center is specific to one day, and it started in the second week of December and is ongoing now. Getting a lot of calls there. So what else is still in progress? Well, the public outreach is definitely still in progress. Like I say, about 75% of those community meetings are underway. We're hearing a lot from our public during those. That's very valuable information. We've emailed community groups. There are dozens to hundreds of community groups, homeowner groups, and Crime Watch and so forth that are receiving emails from us that update them. We have the automated phone calls. Two of the three calls have already gone out, and our results on that is that a little over 50% are receiving those calls. Some of them are receiving them by getting it on their voicemail. Another portion are receiving it actually and hearing the message. Some are in English and some in Spanish. And about a certain portion of the calls are finding unlisted numbers, or they're finding that the call is either busy or no answer, and we'll call back twice before we'll give up and say that's just not going to work for us. In addition to that, I sent out an informational letter to each household affected. It looks like this letter right here. And it highlights in red, your one day is Friday. In fact, this is the letter that came to my house. My neighborhood is changing to a Friday one day of service. Gives a bit of information and then has a red box at the bottom I'm going to tell you about a little more, because it talks about alley to curb service for some. We are continuing to advertise radio, buses, so forth like that. We have card hangers that are going out this week and next, and the card hanger will say, here's what your one day is. And we have some special messages on the water utility bill. We continue to fine-tune the collection routes. We're hearing from our public that there are some issues that they have, and we might have to adjust our routes a little bit. And boy, are we delivering the big blue recycling carts. In fact, if you could go over to slide number 16, Karen, for just a second, I'll show you a map of the distribution of big blue roll carts across the city. You can see the density of where the carts are requested. And we want to see that kind of density throughout the city. The center part of the city and some of the southern areas are just now making their requests. They haven't needed that recycling roll cart as much, but boy, are those calls going up. The call center roll cart requests went up from about 100 to 150 a week. We get requests for it to over 700 this last week. So they're getting the news. They need to have that blue roll cart, and we're getting the calls and we're making deliveries. Go ahead and back to where we were. I've put the slide in with the graph just to remind you of the budgetary impact that one day is making for phases 1, 2, and, well, 3. You'll notice that under FY10, a current year, we showed in the yellow box $2 million worth of savings. That had an 83-cent impact on the rate, of which 64 cents actually got reduced. There were other costs that increased during this past year, but 83 cents was the result of one day. Next year, that impact has a 65-cent effect on the rate. So if nothing else changes about our budget, and you can imagine some things will, but if nothing else changed, the one day would have a 65-cent decrease on the rate. I also wanted to let you know that we certainly still expect to have those savings realized this year and next. There are 24 trucks and their associated drivers that will be not needed after after March, possibly another 2 to 6 in that group. We're finding that we get some more efficiencies as we go through the neighborhoods. I don't expect to reduce or lay off any of those drivers. We are using attrition to, and as folks leave the force for retirement or for other reasons, we are using retired City of Dallas drivers to come back on a temporary basis until March, and then we'll release those folks. As I said, the roll car request, huge surge in requests. Thank goodness for that. And in fact, there's such a huge surge so fast that we'll probably be coming to you at the end of this month to make sure we can extend the funds in the master agreement and get everybody the carts that they need as soon as possible. Let me tell you what our customers are saying as we go out to community meetings, as we answer the phone, as we get emails. I am delighted to say that the large majority are saying we really love one day. In fact, we should have started it years ago. What took you so long is what I'm hearing. They want us to be sure that we're going to follow up quickly on any missed collection. There's concerns, well, you know, what if my neighbor doesn't realize it and they set their garbage out on the wrong day? And we are going to retain our workers through March to make sure you don't have any missed calls that aren't treated within the 24 hours after we get them. We have folks saying, can we recycle more stuff? Back that up, Karen. Can we recycle some more stuff? Plastic bags and styrofoam seem to be what folks would like to recycle more. And again, I continue to work with our processor to find ways to do that. And this is one of my favorite calls is, can't I get a smaller cart? That big blue cart, you know, I don't know if I can wheel it out. So we have a medium-sized cart, and especially for some of the seniors that are requesting it, we're getting a mini cart that it really fits their size. And we'll, as we go to community meetings, we're offering that out. Now, there is a minority that are very vocal as that don't like their garbage messed with. Nobody likes their garbage messed with. And some of them are saying, all right, and some of them saying, over my dead body. But most of them are saying, I have some concerns about making this thing work. I really don't like going from alley service to curb service. And some of them actually are so happy that we're finally moving from the alley to the curb. They know their alleys are in terrible shape. Some of them are afraid to go out in their alleys to put their trash in it. It's in such terrible shape. But others are very happy to have the service in the alley and are concerned that we're bringing it to the curb for about 10% of the group that's being changed over. Some say the sanitation fee wasn't reduced enough. 64 cents a month, why didn't you reduce it by $10 a month? You should cut my fee in half is what we're hearing. So we talk to those folks and explain exactly what the fee reduction was and how it reflects, and that every bit of savings that comes from one day is coming back to them. Some worry about illegal dumping and litter in their neighborhood. They feel, particularly as the garbage is being picked up once a week instead of twice a week, that folks will set out things in empty lots. I've talked with with Joey Zapata over code enforcement. He and his folks are prepared to keep an eye and to be vigilant for this, and are expecting code requests specific to that, and as well as our own folks. Some feel that the roll carts at the curb reduce neighborhood value. They don't like the aesthetic of seeing carts at the curb. Whereas pretty much everywhere else across the city, everyone's pretty happy with it. So there's some folks who are having trouble with it. They're beginning to adjust, but we will have some folks who are just adamant against it, and we're working as best we can with them. And will it work? Well, yeah, one day, of course, it will work beautifully. We still have some more community meetings in February. You'll see a schedule in the appendix. We welcome any of the public to attend any of those public meetings with any concerns that they have. The call center specific to one day is, as I said, having a boon of calls right now. They are coming in quickly, and our call attendants are handling them. In particular, we're getting a lot of calls about this letter. This letter that goes out to say your one day is Friday or Tuesday or whatever your one day happens to be has a red box at the bottom. And the red box at the bottom is being read by our customers, perhaps erroneously. So I'm going to tell you what it says. It says, the changes outlined in this red box only apply only to households who put their garbage out in bags in their alleys. For those folks, you will be putting your garbage at the curb starting on March 1st. Our public are sometimes reading that to say, if you're in the alley, I'm moving you to the curb. So I get many, many calls from folks who are saying, I'm in the alley, why are you moving me to the curb? And 80 to 90% of those calls were able to tell them, no, you're actually not moving from the alley to the curb. You're going to continue having your service right where it is. Just about everyone who has roll carts in the alley right now are staying in the alley. Those who have garbage in bags or their own purchased garbage cart, those folks are almost all moving to the curb. In fact, I think every one of them is. So you'll find that you may be getting calls at your offices as well asking, am I moving? And we'll be happy to field those for you as well. We plan to update you, by the way, after the month of March. We'll send you a council memo to let you know how well one day is working. I'm certainly going to report on how many folks we have on missed calls and how that's working. And I'd be happy to also brief you at any time you request. If I can answer any questions, I'd be glad to do so.
All right, thank you, Ms. Nick. Let me just make a comment, and then we'll go to Ms. Allen. Then we'll sign up from that point. So, Jerry, you'll be next. My concern was, repeat that about the alley to the curb. You and I talked about it this morning specifically,
yes,
so Ms. Williams can understand.
Absolutely,
what we're doing.
Sir. Those residents who are receiving garbage service in city roll carts in the alley are staying in the alley with one day.
Okay.
There are precious few exceptions. There are a few exceptions where the alley has some damage. It's not related to one day, but we may close an alley for repair of the alley and temporarily move them to the front. But the vast majority, if you have city roll carts and you're being served in the alley now, we're keeping it that way.
Okay. Will the trucks, will we send a different type of truck through there, larger or smaller, depending on what we'll be doing?
We are going to send the truck through the alley that will fit. I have three different sized trucks, and I've got them routed to fit the alley as best as possible.
All right. And then on page 7, it was something about some 24 trucks that we are eliminating.
That's right.
Explain that to us.
You know, one of the savings in one day is that we get an efficiency by picking up the garbage only once a week and doubling up the recycling, but it results in an overall efficiency of 24 route drivers that are no longer needed. That's 24 drivers and the trucks that they'd be driving 4 days a week. So when those 24 routes are eliminated starting March 1st, I've got 24 guys sitting around wondering what's going to happen. And we will reduce the force by those 24. I believe we'll do it through attrition rather than by a RIF.
And so we're trying to mix that in so they just won't lose a job, trying to transfer them somewhere or do something and then bring in retirements and all that come into play.
That's exactly right. Folks who are retiring, who are getting a different job, we don't see any. We don't see us dismissing anyone who's a permanent employee.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Allen.
Y'all had really a big undertaking.
Mm-hmm.
A big undertaking. I had a couple of questions, and then you got right back with me and in a very quick manner, and I appreciate that. Yeah, obviously, the big deal is the red box that the people saw and misread. And they all thought it was going to go all of a sudden out to the curb. What's the easiest, simplest way when we get these emails? I heard the word when they call in.
Mm-hmm.
Are y'all telling them right there on the spot? You go down the list, look at their street, and say no, yes.
That's correct.
That would have been the easiest way for my.
We have a listing. Yeah. We're going to, as of today, we're going to put onto the website onedaydallas.com. A map that shows exactly which addresses are moving from the alley to curb. So some folks who don't want to call in your office but can go on to looking it up on the website will find it more immediately that way.
Good. So our assistants can go to that website if somebody's on the phone and tell them right then and there, yay or nay, because the majority of the time it is an exciting situation, the fact that it is one day. And to some degree, we kind of missed a little bit of that opportunity to keep it exciting, because when they saw that red box, it became a negative experience. But then we won them back over again. And that's going to go live today?
Yes, we're going to put it on today.
All right. And one last time, congratulations on getting that that award.
Thank you.
That was big time. That was big time.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Allen. Mr. Cadain.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On the alley to the front, I've got quite a few in my district that will be transforming from alley to the front. And I think we've already gotten one mailing, correct?
That's right, you have.
And that mailing kind of, people thought everybody was going to the front, I think.
Yeah,
from that mailing.
That is, we call it the red box letter now.
Yeah,
red box
okay,
letter.
Good. So, but that's not the case. Not all of them are. The ones that are going to the front are the alleys that are not passable with the trash can in the alley.
That's
they may
right.
be barely passable now, but if you've got the can in the alley, there's no way.
That's correct.
Is that what we're saying?
That's right, Mr. Cadain. Once those carts are placed in place of the bags, those carts take up more room, and there just isn't physically room
for
the carts and the trucks.
And the trucks to go through. So we've got problems. I mean, I'm having a lot of folks calling my office. Should they call directly to your office to find out what and how? And if there are, they need to know, are you picking me up in the back? I have nothing in my office that shows me who's getting alley pickup and who's getting front pickup. You know, and we may could help you in that respect if we knew.
Yeah, we'll provide that to you today, as well as to make sure that your assistants they know the number, which is 311
yeah.
or 671-8877.
Yeah.
That's our hotline at the call center. They
and
can put them through that way, and we're handling them just, you know, one after another.
And we don't have trucks that can get through those alleys. I mean, a lot of my constituents, I mean, they've built their houses with the alleys there.
Mm-hmm.
For the back pickup, and now we're telling them that's no longer going to be the case. There's no way that we can maybe even purchase a truck that can get the alley pickups, because I know some of the alleys that you're not going to be able to pick up in back. You could pick up in the back, but you can't, because the alleys preceding it and after it, you can't get through.
That's
so you're
right.
not going to go through one alley and then go around front to the rest of them.
That's right.
You know, and that's kind of, I mean, I know it's more difficult. And then there's some alleys that folks actually, they're going to have to go through their home with these cans to get out to the front.
I know we've heard residents say that, Mr. Cadain, and usually almost every time we're sending a representative out to look at the residents and resolving it with the homeowner themselves. And I'm telling you, 99 out of 100 times we find a solution that works for the residents. So pass them through to us.
Okay.
We're working miracles over here.
We're directing them to them. And thank you for all you're doing. From the beginning of this, I still haven't seen how you're going to get everything out to everybody, and it looks like you're doing it. I hope on that day you've got all of the carts out there. Hopefully that will happen.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cadain. Ms. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. Mary, congratulations on everything. What would be helpful to me, and I know that my district is not as impacted as Ms. Hunt and Mr. Cadain from alley to curb, I'd like to know the number, at least the streets or the area, of the folks that are mm-hmm. in District 2. So I'd like to, because mine is a very small list, I'd like to personally just call and follow up with them.
That'd
myself.
Be wonderful. Personal
so
contact.
If you will do that, I will do that. Then
okay.
The second, with the follow-up report after everything is implemented, I'd like to see in addition to the follow-up report, the next phase of encouraging slash increasing recycling, because there are a couple of areas in my district that are recycling now. They were in phase two, but there are particular a couple of streets that I think that we need to encourage and increase the amount of recycling that
right.
some of the families are doing.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see that.
Yeah, the too good to throw away emphasis will not change just because we've gone to one day. And thanks for saying so. We will keep that program going strong.
And I think that's it. Thank
okay.
you very much.
Thank you,
Ms. Medrano. Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem, Carol Way. A couple of concerns. First of all, with those neighborhood associations, like the Buckner Terrace Neighborhood Association, I want to give a congratulation to them. They won some type of recycling award or something that they did. What type of initiative will we give those neighborhood associations who really work with One Day Dallas and the recycling and the Big Blue? Are we looking at any type
yeah,
of offer?
Yeah, in fact, we're looking at the Recycle Bank offer right now. Recycle Bank is a company that offers direct rewards back to the recyclers for improving the amount they recycle. So we're studying an agreement to look into that. So that might be one avenue. We have our own internal rewards for it. And, of course, the one reward that everybody likes is a reduction in the sanitation fee.
Okay. And can you give me a list in my district, because I saw on your presentation the blue bins went up in District 7, 32%, which is good.
Yeah.
Give me a list of those who are doing a lot of recycling with the blue bins so while I'm out I can do some type of awards presentation to that particular neighborhood association.
That's a really great idea because it helps the neighboring folks to realize there's folks out there with blue carts and they're going to need them. Rather than seeing 30%, we'd like to see a 70 or 75% participation with blue carts. And,
right,
and we're
right.
going to try to get your areas right up to that.
Okay, the other concern, you know, Sheffy and I, we share districts. And I got some calls. Mm-hmm. The first call I got was, I guess there was an article about recycling in the paper, and they wanted to know from reading the paper if their bins was in the alley, they would have to take it down to the end of the sidewalk from the alley. And I didn't know. Is that true?
No, I haven't seen any cases that are like that in the state. As we were saying earlier, if your residents start to recognize they're receiving alley service in roll carts, in city roll carts now, it'll stay exactly the same.
Okay. And the next thing, you know, we talk about small alleys. You know those little things they use downtown, the police department, they like, I don't know what they're called.
Mm.
They like little scooters.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Those little scooters. Could we get something like that and have a wagon added onto the back of it where the person would just have to get out and perhaps do the blue bag
Let me take a look at that. That's an interesting concept. We'll see if we have – that's something we've looked at for multifamily recycling,
mm-hmm.
but I'll get back with you and we'll
Yeah, instead of using the blue – courts in the back,
mm-hmm.
they could perhaps do the blue bag
mm-hmm.
and recycle from the blue bag in order to still pick up. That's something that perhaps we can look into.
Appreciate the idea.
And then the last thing. Now, on with recycling, and we're using the blue bins now, is that going to cut our labor force?
Well, the one-day program itself reduces sanitation's labor force, as I said, by 24 drivers. I also want to emphasize, though, is we expect that none of those 24 drivers will be laid off.
Okay.
Instead, over the past few months and over the next month, as we have folks who are retiring, promoting elsewhere, rather than filling those emptying driver jobs with new drivers, I'm filling them with temporary retired drivers. These retired guys already know the routes and the equipment. I'm bringing them back just for a couple of months, and then come March, I can let them go as temporary drivers, and I'll be down.
Now, what happens to the 24 drivers that's going to They're not going to lose their job, but what happens to those 24 drivers?
They're going to be reassigned. Most of them are being reassigned to recycling routes because the number of recycling routes have increased while the number of garbage routes have decreased.
Now, in an area like mine, especially the South Dallas area, Fair Park area, when sanitation picks up, Mary, they need to, because it's gotten better with cold, but it's hit and miss. And all of this is not cold's fault. A lot of this is sometimes the workers of sanitation, when they're picking up the bus trash or they're picking up the can, the trash somehow goes back to the streets. And sometimes they're not picking up the rest of the debris. And that's my only concern as we start the one day, that we have to make sure that they're picking up the rest of the trash.
Okay? I'm hearing what you're saying. And I'll dedicate that. We'll go take a look at your neighborhoods after the first or second week of March and see what you're seeing and look for areas that you think we need to improve in.
Okay, then. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Davis. We're going to go with Ron, then to Nail, then Steve, and then we're going to close out with Sheffy.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You know, colleagues, as you know, and you've heard both from Ms. Coop and I, and a little bit from Mr. Newman, since he got on. See if you were paying attention, Dave. You know what? I just want to assure you, there is life after once a week garbage pickup and recycling. Okay. And you know, I think some of the issues. It's interesting. Sitting on the sidelines and hearing the questions and the citizens who are calling in with red boxes and no red boxes and all that stuff. Having been there, done that, we're alive and well, okay? We have a few wounds here and there, but, you know, I'm not sure that the reality of a lot of the concerns that you're hearing are really going to come through. There's going to be some issues anytime you change something. But, you know, one of the things that I noted was a question about, you know, trash being blown around and all that and having to have code. Joey work with neighborhoods to make sure that that doesn't happen. I would venture to guess that if they look back in my district, in Ms. Coop's district, when we transitioned, I would venture to say that we had absolutely no more complaints with, you know, trash in the alley, trash in streets than we had before. I used to get those complaints when we had twice a week garbage pickup and once every other week recycling, and they complained. And so I think a lot of it is just, you know, sort of anxiety on the part of the citizens, and probably, you know, they're well within their rights to have that anxiety, but I think in the end we've got a program that will work. I've got a question for you, Mary. On slide, the very last one in the appendix, number 16?
Yeah.
What does that represent? Is that places that have a blue recycle card?
Yeah, those are folks who have ordered and have received
a blue recycle card
since we've started the program. So you, as you can see, in
but
the
what
barn,
is it like, for example, in District 12, what is the 79%? Is that a percentage of the single family homes or?
That is the percentage of customers we serve.
Okay.
Which
are essentially single family or duplexes,
right.
Not multifamily.
Correct.
Okay.
That's correct. So almost 80% of your constituents that we serve are using the blue card now.
Okay. Can you also produce a map that shows, for example, there are pink areas in my district that I know are wall-to-wall apartment complexes from one street to a half a mile or a mile another street, which will never be converted. So that there's some way that we can identify which neighborhoods maybe don't have participation and that we can work with the HOAs in those neighborhoods to try to find those remaining few people and get them to participate in the program. Multifamily is a different issue, and I know that you're working on that, but I guess what I'm saying, if I look at that, I would immediately go after the pink areas, but not all of them can be converted is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I can get you that map and that information by streets. So, yeah, we'll be glad to do that.
And the other thing, colleagues, one of the things is that sometimes you can shame, you know, one neighbor can shame the other neighbor into getting a blue card. I know I've made some calls like that when you drive through, and the only people that you'll see with their lid up and the garbage piled high on the gray cart, and then you look next to it, and gee whiz, there's no recycling cart, because they're putting all their recycling and all their garbage in the gray one. And I've actually called a few of those people and said, you know, it wouldn't be piled so high if you called 311 and got yourself a blue cart. And I've actually had some mysteriously delivered. So, anyway. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Mary, you know, in District 8, you know, I see a little 27%, and District 8 is so huge, and I would like to have a grid to outline which part of the district that you're going to be saying is going to take to pick up the trash from the front versus the rear.
Okay.
And I know they're going to be very, very difficult because it's quite so huge, you know, when you get to Cleburne, Riley, and certain areas. But if you can have one of your staff represented, you know, every other week, starting Thursday, we have many town hall meetings. We're going to be at Cleburne Riley, we're going to be at Tomba Island, we're going to be at Signal Hill, we're going to be in the library. If you get the information to me, I'd be sure to get it out so people would know what's going on.
Sounds great, and we'd be happy to come if you'd like us to.
We got one Thursday night at 6 o'clock at Tomba Island, many town hall
meetings. Very good.
Thank you.
We'll be there.
Thank you.
Thank you. I just want to make sure that while we're emphasizing efficiency, we're emphasizing cutting down the trip routes on a weekly basis, we don't underemphasize the need to make sure that we provide these employees with their safety equipment that they need, make sure they have proper uniforms. And since they're going to be using more mechanical machines that are attached to these trucks, that we make sure that, you know, they're properly trained, because obviously when you have just a driver and the truck and you have a cart, you know, we need to make sure that, you know, that we're doing everything possible so that, you know, anybody who might accidentally, you know, come across next to a can accidentally while this truck's grabbing at this can, make sure that these drivers are trained to make sure to, you know, to look around and you know, basically to cut down on any accidents that could happen. Obviously, when you have, you know, routes where you have two people involved, you know, you also have an extra pair of eyes, but in case we're going to have one person, we need to make sure that, you know, the mirrors are properly placed and these trucks are inspected on a daily basis to make sure that, that they have the equipment to do a good job out there. So I'm excited that, you know, my district is going to be doing it. I think for about 2 years now, I've been telling in all the town hall meetings, the budget meetings, that this was coming. And, you know, with people who are concerned about their areas that people don't want it, I think after it's there and it's in operation, they're going to see that it's more efficient, it works better, and they have less pileup. Especially right now, the can that piles up is always the recycling can that piles up because it's on a two-week basis, and we need it more on a one-week cycle. So thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Margolis.
Quick question. Have you considered finding trucks that have arms going both ways to reduce the wear and tear on the alleys, that you only have to go down once and not necessarily come back the other way?
Yeah, we have actually looked at the two-armed bandit instead of the one-armed. They're substantially more costly to purchase and to operate. But we look at them when we evaluate them each year, because sometimes the prices will come down. They're not used at all with any widespread use, and it's because there aren't many cities that do collection in alleys. What we're trying to do more and more of, Ms. Margolin, is to put the rear-loading truck with the manpower on the back in the alleys so that they go down one time and pick up the carts on both sides of the alley. When that rear loader is not available, we'll sometimes put in the automated truck, and yes, he does go down one direction and the other.
Mm-hmm. When you analyze it on a cost basis, do you look at the wear and tear to the alley as a component of that cost?
Yeah, so we have to do some rough estimates on that, but yeah, that is a factor. That
okay.
is a factor.
All right, thank you.
All right, thank you. Mr.
Cadane. Thank you. Mary, I don't know, and I know you've looked at this every which way. about moving from the alley to the front. But maybe we could look at it a little bit more, and maybe the ones that aren't able to put cans in the alley, we can continue with the bags. Because I've just got to tell you, I'm totally not for moving from the alley to the front. And I've just got too many people that we are moving that's their only complaint. I mean, they're for the one-day deal and the recycling, but if there's some way we could maintain those alleys and just keep, because we don't have the one-arm deals going down the alleys. You've got men on those trucks. They're going to have to pick the carts up to put them on there. They could throw the bags in there just as easy, maybe. So I wish you'd look at that just a little closer and see if there's a way we can do that.
I understand what you're asking.
Yeah.
I'm going to first tell you that I don't recommend staying in bags for once-a-week garbage because of the public health risk from sanitary issues. I think it's not a wise thing to do. Once they're in carts, the question will be if there's really some unusual circumstances in some alleys, I'll come meet with you about that. If we need a special mini truck, we'll talk about that. There's an unexpected cost associated with that, but let's talk about it. And then we'll see if we can, as I say, some of your residents who are contacting you were able to find a way that works for them. I'm certain that 100% won't be thrilled and happy, but I think we're going to get the large majority of them to buy on to one day.
Okay.
And I'll come meet with you about any who are difficult to and have difficult circumstances.
Well, that's the only thing about that program that bothers me is moving from the alley to the front.
Yes, sir.
And I just can't be behind that. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Ms. Hostel, and then we'll close out with Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Mayor. Mary, I think this program is obviously the best thing for us in recycling. Very good, glad to hear about the smaller carts for our seniors.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that message has gotten out, but I'll certainly make sure that our seniors get that. And if you've got any kind of paraphernalia on that, we'd love to send that out.
Okay.
I'm still very concerned with those people who may or may not be getting, the message on what we're trying to do. I'm talking about our Spanish-speaking people. I know you've gotten everything out in both languages, but some people will continue to overstuff the gray carts, which is what I keep hearing in District 1. We've not combated our litter problem, our illegal dumping problem, even on some of our major thoroughfares. So I would like to see some sort of follow-up after the March 1st to see where our pockets are that we need to go back and focus on and make sure people have the information and number one, that they understand it.
We'll do that.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Newman and then Ms. Hunt, and we will close out with Mayor Leftwich.
It keeps moving. Thank you. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem, Mary and council members. I'm very pleased about One Day Dallas. We've had four community meetings in my district specifically about it. Three of the four were a smashing success. One we won't talk about. Very pleased. I'm a little embarrassed that District 3 is only 46%. I wish these numbers represented an increase, Ron, as opposed to a percentage of participation. Oh, that's okay. But because at some of these community meetings, I've goaded my neighbors about, you know, this far North Dallas group of people that are ahead of us in Oak Cliff and that sort of thing. So, and that gets their ire up. I'm very pleased about it. I think it makes good sense. It's about good neighborhoods. It's about good policy, public policy, and that sort of thing. So I'm very glad we're doing it. I'm glad the council a year ago made this decision to move forward. And I appreciate the council a year and a half ago agreeing to do a starter initiative for Keystwood neighborhood in District 3. That was a very important thing to say for the Oak Cliff neighborhood, the Keystwood. If it can work there in 450 houses, it can work elsewhere, kind of bring down the barriers. So, but I want to say again, this is a very positive thing for our city and specific to my district. So thank you. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I think Sheffy and I both have the largest number of folks who are moving from alley pickup to curb pickup, and as we discussed a year ago, I knew and envisioned that it wouldn't be an issue that we're going to once a week recycling or once a week trash pickup, but the largest issue would be that move from the alley to the curb. And my instinct was right, because the complaints that I've received have been concerns about that move. I can tell you, though, my constituents remain unclear about whether their alley is affected, and they're also unclear, Mary, about why. There has not been a clear enough explanation about why there is this move.
All right.
And I really want to see something sent to each and every resident who is affected, and a very clear and simple explanation that you've put forth, which is, quite simply, there are many alleys in East Dallas that are too narrow to accommodate our trucks, as well as two trash cans on each side.
Okay.
And you need to get that message out, because I can tell you all my constituents are hearing right now is that they're, including my husband, which is my toughest constituent, because he's the guy who moves the trash in our house, and he's frustrated. He does vote. He does vote. And I may need to watch where his finger gets pushed this next time around if he's unhappy with this outcome. But it's a tough situation, and I think we deserve to our residents deserve a better explanation as to why this is happening, who it's actually going to impact, kind of with a map to show folks exactly where it is, because right now the information is lacking and there's not a clear explanation as to why. So will you give me, and I think, if I don't mean to speak for Mr. Cadane, but will you give us, if you're going to continue to move forward on this policy, can you give us a timeline as to how you're going to deal with the concerns I just raised?
Yeah, let me see if I can set up a meeting to meet with you both in the next couple of days and say, here's how we can go about that.
Let's do that, please.
Absolutely.
Let's do that.
Thank you, Mayor Leffler.
Thank you very much, Mary. We appreciate it. I know there's some notes out. Appreciate it. Let's go on and try to hit the final briefing that we've got, do that before lunch. One item has come up in advance that's not on the agenda, and I recall a television show with Jack Lord, and it was Hawaii something or other, and I can't figure out what it was, but I know that second digit also kind of represents, you know, not being old, and I can't get the sense of it, but it's that something just comes to mind. What was it? Oh, does that suggest anything, Mr. Newman? Are you ready, Chevy?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear day. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you. I love that television show, Hawaii Five-O. That shows you how old I am. And the planes that Ron was pointing out here on the left field. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday, sir.
Thank you.
The final one, then, let's try to get it between now and 12, is going to be the aquarium. I think you can do it relatively quickly.
Good morning, Mayor and members of the City Council. Very pleased today to bring to you an update on our Children's Aquarium at Fair Park. There's a very rich history of this aquarium. It was built during the sesquicentennial and hasn't been remodeled since 36, so you can imagine what kind of condition it's in. We studied the aquarium along with the Savannah, and our dream back in the early 90s was to create a world-class aquarium, much like a world-class Savannah. We're moving forward on the Savannah. I have to tell you that at the time we looked at the aquarium, we talked to Sunoil and some other folks. We visited Monterey Bay. We looked at Tampa, the Shedd Aquarium across the country, and we decided that we wanted a world-class aquarium in Dallas. It was $70 million, but we needed a partner. Those times are much like now. The partnership fell out. We backed off of that. We decided we will hold off and see what we can do. During that interim, the Dallas World Aquarium came along and filled a niche that we couldn't fill, and were doing very well and still are for that matter. I've had conversations with them over the years to ask them if would they mind managing the Fair Park Aquarium, and they said they don't have an interest. So we back up again. Along comes Greg Hudson, and Greg looked around the country and decided that there is a niche for the Dallas, the Fair Park Aquarium, and that niche is a children's aquarium, which was a brilliant idea. There's one in New York. The Upstate Aquarium in New York is very much the same type of building. It's an old 36 structure built during the WPA era, and it is one that we're modeling us after. So some $8 million later, now we're going to have a world-class children's aquarium, and I'm very excited about this. As you know, when the zoo was privatized last year, along with that responsibility, we asked them to continue to manage the Dallas Aquarium because of their ability to have the kinds of staff on hand, particularly the veterinarian staff and some of the other animal husbandry areas, that can help us manage something. We had to do it from scratch. It would be very costly. And so in that negotiation, the Dallas Zoo agreed to continue to manage the Fair Park Aquarium. In that context, we were charging about $3 to $4 per person to go to the aquarium in the years past. Our revenues were somewhere around $300,000, maybe a little bit less. Our expenses were somewhere north of there, about maybe $320 to $350. So we were close to breaking even. With this new product, we are very comfortable with the fact that we can charge $6 or $7 for adults. Most of the elements in Fair Park are now at $8, but that charge will generate about twice the revenue at the same attendance levels, but we think the attendance will go up. Our costs aren't going to go up, we think, much more than 50%. So I think Greg and I are fairly comfortable that we can make this break even and are very much dedicated to making this aquarium not be a cost burden, and so we're working to that end. I'm going to ask Greg to brief you on the aquarium itself. We're staged to open sometime late this year, probably before the fair, and it's going to be a great addition to Fair Park and hopefully continue to improve the attendance at Fair Park and bring the kind of things that Fair Park's that families will want to go and see. So with that, I would like to reintroduce you to Greg Hudson, who has not been around for a while.
Greg? Thanks, Paul.
Good morning, everyone. It's another exciting partnership project between the Park Department and the Dallas Zoo. And, as Paul mentioned, there have been a lot of studies that have been done over the aquarium over the years. And when I came in 2006 and assumed the directorship, I went back and looked at the most recent planning study, which had been done in 2001, a very ambitious expansion, mainly focused on the kind of a Trinity watershed freshwater approach of converting the aquarium over to that. The projected cost on that was about $40 million. Again, as Paul said, that was a little more expensive than what we had support to develop. But the land planning and usage, and you can see from this rendering of going out the back of the aquarium and creating some different types of expansion for capacity reasons and differentiating of the collection was, I thought, a great idea. So taking that and at the same time, the aquarium lost its accreditation with the in 2001 with the American Zoo and Aquarium Association. A lot of that was the structural issues with the building, a lot of the water quality issues. The infrastructure was really having a hard time supporting the aquarium itself, and so it lost its accreditation status. The zoo still maintained its accreditation status with AZA, but the aquarium lost it that in 2001. So in 2002, Paul and the team embarked on a marketing study to really just say, is it valid for us to keep the aquarium in Fair Park? And this study pointed out some great things. It validated that this marketplace can support an aquarium in Fair Park. That's a very important part of the equation at Fair Park. And as I delved into those numbers when I came in 2006, I also saw some really interesting demographic numbers that said the primary market was really being used as families with children under five. That's even younger than what it normally goes to the zoo. And it's really being used as kind of a child's first experience with an aquarium. We thought that was really an important key thing. There were some 2003 bond monies that were set aside to upgrade the facilities after that market study, to bring it up to current standards and apply for accreditation. And I broadened those a little bit in 2006 when I got here to say we also need to create some new experiences for the visitors, increase visitation and revenue, and then also differentiate it from the Dallas World Aquarium. Dallas World Aquarium is, as Paul said, about 500,000 visitors annually, adult ticket price of about $18.95. And the aquarium was, up until this past year, was at about 135,000 visitors and was charging about $4 for the adult ticket price. So the idea of the Children's Aquarium was born from that. And basically based on, like I said, a child's first aquarium experience, and to kind of create it around the greatest hits of an aquarium, the things you'd expect to see, octopus and shark, and have it be very hands-on and fun, done with a very whimsical kind of graphic finish out and very tactile, where the kids can actually get their hands wet and touch some of the animals and really create a bonding experience. Here's one of the first things was to take a popular temperate exhibit that the zoo had called Stingray Bay and bring that into the aquarium mix. And here's a aerial rendering of what that expansion out the back for a Stingray Bay exhibit would look like. And that, if you remember, when the aquarium had that, or when the zoo had Stingray Bay a couple years ago, had a couple hundred thousand people come through specifically for that. It was a very, very popular exhibit. The conceptual plan, which was done by a firm called Lion Zaremba out of New England, they had done the New England Aquarium, they had done Chattanooga Aquarium, some of the large aquariums in the country, but also had done some very small conversions of Art Deco buildings to children's aquarium concept, and that's why we brought them in. They basically went through and have designed a series of galleries on the inside around those greatest hits of the animals. So a freshwater gallery, a intertidal gallery, shores gallery, and then also with this expansion out the back. And as I said, we used that New York State Aquarium as a template. So you can see we've softened up. We bring carpeting in to make it a little softer so that the acoustics are better. We've brought the eye level down on a lot of the exhibits, so it's at a kid's level things. We brought dimensionality out into some of the design so that it becomes a lot more fun and interesting for the kids. So it's just not a row of aquarium like the traditional way that had been set up since 1936. Here's some conceptual plans of what those galleries might look like. We also have teacher workstations built into each one so that when school groups come out, there'll be some curriculum developed for those teachers and to be able to, for them to be able to teach their class as they come through. We will have a full-time education person on staff, but it'll be the teachers themselves that'll be going through these galleries and using these stations in each of the galleries. And as I said, each one will be built around a theme. The Coastal Touch area will have some very hands-on things with starfish and horseshoe crabs and things for the kids to touch right there in the front as you first walk in. We have a freshwater intertidal pool that will kind of have the marsh animals of turtles and some of the freshwater fish as well as gators in there for kids to be able to see. On the shores, we'll have a big schooling tank right there in the front that will be a very wonderful thing to be able to see there in the beginning of the sequence for everybody to see. Of course, octopus is one of the most popular animals that we've had at the aquarium for a long time. We're building in a all-new area to move into, along with some wolf eels that will be an exciting thing for the kids to be able to see. A gallery on jellies. They're one of the most majestic animal in the sea, and for us to be able to have that and put up a nice display of them, I think will be very exciting. We'll have a whole area on corals and seagrasses and actually being able to harvest and grow some of our own corals in the aquarium. That'll be the first time we've ever been able to do that. Of course, then the anchor of that is going to be the stingray area in the back that will expand the capacity inside the aquarium. It'll be an indoor-outdoor exhibit with a pool for stingrays and for sharks that nurse sharks and things will be able to be touched by the kids as they go out in the back. And you can see this is a decked expansion with a sheltered overhang off the back of the building that will greatly increase the capacity for the experience for the exhibit. Here's an artist rendering of what that would look like. That will be able to operate 365 days a year. We'll be able to enclose the sides, temperature control it, but it will have a much of an outdoor feel like you're on the coast. And will be a great area for us for after-hours activities as well. The project timelines and issues that we've been dealing with, the construction actually began in October of 2009, so right as the private management contract was being worked out with the society, the construction was beginning on the aquarium. It was about 10 to 12 months of construction, so we're anticipating for that construction to finish right at the end of this summer, and for us to be able to start moving in over the course of August and into early September. The cost forecast is about $8.2 million, and the source of those funds were 2003 and 2006 bond funds. The schedule of opening, you know, we're hopeful to have, if not all the operation, at least a big portion of the new things open for this state fair. We think a great sneak peek of that would be a wonderful thing with the big crowds that are going to be out there, help us kick off the new theme and the marketing. And then, because we've got a lot of things at play here with acquisition of animals and other things, we'd be fully up and operational in late 2010, early 2011. So very aggressive schedule, but it's coming along very well. And we have also been working on the ticket pricing. We've gotten in the last sequence of the budget with the park board, they approved an adult ticket price of up to $8. Now, that's not to say we're going to charge $8. We have the ability to look at that as Paul and I are working together on the budget to be able to if it's between $6 and $8 is where we think that it'll be. But we do have the ability with the park board to take it up to an $8 ticket price. And that's right in line with most of the experiences out at Fair Park. Here's some actual shots that we took last week. The Stingray bays are under construction. This is a temporary tent that was brought in as a with the inclement weather for us to be able to work on the pools. The indoor galleries are underway. One of the big things that you can see in these pictures is that the old handrails have been removed. Those were historic handrails. We worked with the Historic Commission on that to save those handrails. But that opened up about 8 feet inside the building all the way down for us to be able to use to create these galleries. So it was a real important thing to do that. And then a lot of the infrastructure improvements have been done. The new skylights, the new roofing's been done. A lot of the areas are being resealed and repainted. All electrical, new water systems. It's going to be a very much more energy efficient and up-to-date operation and better water quality and hopeful for accreditation within the first 12 months of operation. So that's a very quick overview of the aquarium. We're very excited about the project and going to open it up for any questions for Paul or I.
Terrific. Ms. Davis.
I want to thank Paul and the Gallery Zoo for everything they've put in to making this Turin Aquarium the best in the country. Paul has been keeping me abreast on the aquarium. One of the things I want to mention was when this is finished, marketing to the schools in the nearby area, what is the plan for that?
As I said, we have a full-time education director mm-hmm. that will be on, and that will be their charge is to develop the curriculum and then also develop the outreach that we will do to the schools mm-hmm. For the for the school groups and the kids that will be coming out there on a daily basis. So we will mimic it after the programs that we have with the Dallas Zoo. The zoo, is, as you know, does about 250,000 school kids a year through our gate. So we'll actually be co-marketing those mm-hmm. as a part of that. That's some of the efficiencies that we're going to get from the Dallas Zoo and this management contract. It's things like education, the vet care, a lot of the administrative and marketing. Those will all be a part of this agreement, and the aquarium itself won't have to bear the cost of that, which is a great thing.
Okay. The other thing, when I went with Mr. Carraway, took some kids to Houston, and we went to the aquarium there, and I saw a lot of kids touching some of those, like the jellyfish uh-huh. and some of the other water right. creatures, and they would take their hands and just hit their nose. How will we kind of...
Yeah, there's a huge... we have sanitation and hand-washing stations set
mm-hmm.
up in both indoor and outdoor. That's a whole part of... Those will all be manned by volunteers and staff to make sure that from a hygiene standpoint, mm-hmm. that they are washing their hands anytime.
So before they touch any of the animals,
absolutely,
they'll have to wash their hands. Will there be signs and stuff?
Yes, signs posted? And also be, it will be manned anywhere that we have that kind of interaction. There'll be someone stationed there to do.
Okay, and then the very last question: are we within the budget? I think we are.
Yeah, yes, we're within the capital budget.
Mm-hmm.
We're still working on the yearly operating budget. Paul and I are working on that,
mm-hmm.
and as Paul said, we're working extremely hard to where it have a kind of zero impact on the operating budget, to where income will match what the expenses are.
And then the sneak preview that you talked about, when you talk about sneak preview, is that for the council members to go out and take
a look at?
No, that'll
be open to the public as a part of the fair. We're hopeful we can have all of the aquarium open, but because of the acquisition of some of the fish and some of those things, we may only have parts of it open to kind of sneak preview the coming children's aquarium, and then hopefully be totally up to speed by the end of the year.
And what month are we looking at for the sneak preview?
In September.
September
year? We're shooting for Labor Day.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Super. Paul and Greg, thank you very much. Appreciate all the work on this, and I think everybody in the city is excited to go out and see it. I think it's a real good way to handle it and to make something that's competitive without spending a lot of dollars and increasing the risk. So we appreciate that.
Okay.
With that, that completes the agenda for today. We've only got a couple of speakers. Why don't we grab those speakers right now? We'll limit it to 2 minutes. And then there is going to be a reception press conference in regard to the Minority Business Council that I know everybody's invited to in the flag room. And then following that, I'll ask all the council, if they would, to convene in the briefing room downstairs. We have a relatively short executive session, and we'll have lunch served at the same time. We'll do that as a working lunch over the executive session. Madam Secretary?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We begin your afternoon speakers with Walter Velez, followed by Ozumba Lunks. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals will be allowed 2 minutes to speak. The timers are on both screens. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. You may address your comments to Mayor Leppard. Please come forward. State your name and address for the record. Again, for Speaker Walter Velez. Excuse me, Mr. Lunks. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Walter Velez. I live at 1103 North Bishop Avenue, which is real close to the Methodist Hospital. My issue today is illegal land usage next door to my house. I live in a corner house. A roofing company moved about 2 years ago into that location. That location, that building that I'm talking about, is zoned neighborhood office, with some restrictions that they cannot have a storage, overnight storage, or they cannot operate at night, and some other restrictions. The problem here is that the roofing company last month, brought a fleet of vehicles, a fleet of vans, which they use to store materials and collect labor in that particular place. And I'm very disappointed because I've been on that particular location for 19 years, which is a lot of time, and overnight, these fleet of vehicles are destroying the alley. They're doing a lot of off-street parking, and, well, to tell the story short, I put some cameras to just observe what's going on, because somebody shot at my house about 6 months ago, and I cannot believe that the next door neighbor, the owner of the roofing company, which is a 50-so-many years old man, came into my location and beat the camera with a pole. So I did a couple of DVDs, a couple of copies, that has at least 1,000 files of all the code violations for the last, the last 30 days. And I would like to see if somebody can help me addressing this issue to remove the, if we can get rid of the fleet out of the location, and we can stop the storage, we get rid immediately of the labor, because they don't have no reason to have the labor on that location.
Okay. Let me go ahead, and if you'll stay after you finish speaking for just a couple of minutes. You've actually touched on two things. One is a code violation issue. We'll have a couple of people meet with you, but then we'll also have a representative of the police department that will meet with you because of the property crime that you identified. So if you'll stay after, there's three individuals that will meet with you just in the back of the room, and they I think, can help you and at least point all of us in the right direction. We want to be responsive.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Ms. Hoskins, did you want to add please?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. Mr. Velez, thank you for coming down. I know it's a big effort to come downtown to talk about the problems you're having, but I guarantee you we will take care and make sure that we look at your video and get some resolution to this. So please stay a little bit so we can work with you.
Okay.
Thank you.
I have two copies of the video, so I can leave you one copy
right.
as well.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate you being here.
Your next speaker is Ozumba Lunks, followed by Gwen Wooten.
Maryland State Chief Ozumba Lunks, there's a $500 reward for the arrest and conviction of those who are stealing absentee ballots and are threatening senior citizens and everything for their ballots by precinct 5, Judge Lewis of Poverty, and I'll add a couple of dollars to that. Liberty, equality, and justice, this is not just about me, it's about everybody. I was arrested in 2004 for defending my life. I feared for my life. And I was charged with deadly conduct because of a gang messing around with me. I went to court for 13 months, and what this city did to me, this city, this county did to me, in the name of justice, were criminal and a grave miscarriage of justice. I'm still waiting for an answer. I don't know anything. They just told me, back. You can go as over. You know, I need to know something, Merrill. And you need to stop cutting our time, Merrill. That's unfair. But God would deal with this. Just like he brought an earthquake in Haiti, or he let it happen, God would deal with it. I'm going to God because right now nobody listens to me. I'm praying continually on my knees. And I do weep sometimes for God to help me with the problem I have because no one hear me. But you will hear God. God is Alpha and he is Omega. He made us for himself. God is everything. We are healed. I tell you. But anyway, God will take care of it. I'm still waiting for an answer about why the rest would have been in my life. Why would my life be so much lesser than anyone else's life? I don't know if they call them colored, Negro, or whatever you want to call me. I prefer to just be a human, one of God's children. But if a name is put to me, I would consider myself, I guess, as being an African American. God bless you all, and may God help the children. And I know he will, because I am consistent, and I look at myself as being one of God's elect, and all of God's children are his elect. Thank you.
Mr. Secretary?
Next speaker is Gwen Wooten, not present. William Hopkins will be followed by B.N. Randolph.
I'm not surprised that you gave the blacks and Hispanics 2 minutes, Tom. I come down here to tell you about the people that's dying in West Dallas, so you cut the time on the blacks and Hispanics. Louis Sepulveda told me he went to a secret meeting, Tom, that you had. You told him not to tell nobody about the lead meeting that you had. George Louis Sepulveda told me you told him not to tell nobody. You didn't have no city council people in the meeting. It was a secret meeting. You told them not to tell nobody. The people in the meeting told me that you told them not to tell nobody. So, you know, you let the people die. I gave you the lawsuit where the city of Dallas sued the RSR lead plant. So you probably going to take the money and get the people that you told not to tell it, get them some money from the lead money that the city sued the RSR lead plant for, and you keep it a secret. And three other people have died since you had that secret meeting, Tom. Don't know city council people know about it. They probably won't even ask you about the secret meeting you had, Tom, because you're a white man. And so they probably not even going to ask you about the secret meeting that you had, or even ask you, well, Tom, did you have a secret meeting with Judge Louis Sepulveda? You think and one of these city council people going to ask you that? By you being a white man, they're going to sit there and get their little check and let the people die in West Dallas. And I'll be back next week and tell you about the whoever else died in West Dallas. I'll give you all the name of the people that died in West Dallas, so, you know, so you'll know.
Secretary. Next speaker is B.M. Randall, followed by Leslie Allen Davis.
I am B.M. Randolph. On the streets, I'm known as Mother Randolph. I have basically been ignored in the city of Dallas, but things that are done in the dark will come to light. I now know that the Dallas Police Department had a crime charge against me. I couldn't get anybody to talk to me, so for 12 years, my life has been really miserable. But for the last 5 years, they have been hell in Dallas, persecution and all that. I won't go into that right now because I basically just kept on keeping on. I go to Dallas South, first of all, Oak Cliff, where I reside, West End, Dallas South, and Pleasant Grove. I told you, Rick, when I first came here, that I asked for where was Dallas's hell hole. Because I didn't just went to Dallas, I was sent to Dallas. I've been commissioned by the Holy Ghost to come up here. And I tell you, I said, I'm not going to leave until I finish my charge. You may carry me away in a box, but I'm not walking out. I've been fought, hell fought. I'm still standing, but I decided to do things that's positive. I've been trying to do things like buy the reunion arena. I said, you'd rather tear it down than let a person have it. But that's okay. The plan is still in the pocket. I don't know where it's going to come up, and I don't know when it's going to come up, but it's going to come up because it's a God thing. The other thing is I have planned for, as you saw on your paper, your note, a citywide outreach for Valentine's Day. That's going to be sponsored by Making a Difference. That's my business. Can't get in funding because somebody in Dallas stole my business name, and I can't get any funding, but that's okay. We're going to do it anyway. So I'll be sending out flyers to let people know. It's going to be from 12:30 to 3:30. It's going to have a Christian event, Christian atmosphere. No drinking, no booze, none of that. We want to let people know about God. We want to let people know about Jesus, who is the lover of my soul. And that's why you can't stop me. You can't stop a person from loving somebody. And your love will, you know, it'll just take care of everything. So just pack your lunches, bring your bags, and come out and have lunch like they used to have dinner on the ground in some churches. Have dinner on the ground at the Keys Park. Enjoy yourself. Mother Randolph is still out there.
Thank you.
Your final speaker, Leslie Allen Davis, is not present.
Okay.
That concludes the speakers.
It is now 12:02 on February the 3rd of 2010. The City Council will now go into a closed session under Section 551.071 of the Texas Open Meetings Act to receive advice from and consult with the City Attorney on the following matters: Ritiz's versus the MR Elevator, Blair versus Dallas, legal issues relating to the renegotiation of the McComas Bluff Landfill Gas Agreement between the City of Dallas and Dallas Clean Energy. Let's plan on starting the executive session at 12:30, and then hopefully we'll be in adjournment in the area of about 1 o'clock. Thank you.